Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance where we're able. We do routines to call the scenes, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give and rhyme to our triumphing able. We're rock so mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram along.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sam, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
But if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Hear ye! Hear ye! King Shaziz the Terrible! All rise for King Shaziz the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table!
There are some flat earthers out there who still consider the existence of a supreme deity to be either necessary or self-evident or both. And with that, as previously announced, I will be turning the podium over to Mr. Wheaton, who will be presenting his case in favor of a supreme celestial dictator, otherwise known as God.
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness. And I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree. The So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old, I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
There are some flat earthers out there who still consider the existence of a supreme deity to be either necessary or self-evident or both. And with that, as previously announced, I will be turning the podium over to Mr. Wheaton, who will be presenting his case in favor of a supreme celestial dictator, otherwise known as God. Mr. Wheaton, are you ready? Podium is yours.
Atheists say that no one can prove the existence of God, and they're right. But I say no one can disprove that God exists. But the only way to debate this issue is to look at the available evidence, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to put God on trial, with Professor Radisson as the prosecutor, me as the defense attorney, and you as the jury. Most cosmologists now agree that the universe began some 13.7 billion years ago in an event known as the Big Bang. So let's look at theoretical physicist and Nobel Prize winner Steven Weinberg's description of what the Big Bang would have looked like. And since he's an atheist, we can be sure there isn't any believer bias in his description. In the beginning, there was an explosion, and in 3 minutes, 98% of the matter there is or ever will be was produced. We had a universe. For 2,500 years, most scientists agreed with Aristotle on the idea of a steady-state universe, that the universe has always existed with no beginning and no end. But the Bible disagreed. In the 1920s, Belgian astronomer George Lemaître, a theist, who's actually also...
What's a theist?
A theist is someone who believes in the existence of God. He said that the entire universe, jumping into existence in a trillionth of a trillionth of a second, out of nothingness in an unimaginably intense flash of light, is how he would expect the universe to respond if God were to actually utter the command in Genesis 1:3, "Let there be light." In other words, the origin of the universe unfolded exactly how one would expect after reading Genesis, and for 2,500 years, the Bible had it right, and science had it wrong. All of which points to a God that created it. You see, in the real world, we never see things jumping into existence out of nothingness, but atheists want to make one small exception to this rule, namely the universe and everything in it.
But in his book, The God Delusion, Richard Dawkins says that if you tell me God created the universe, then I have the right to ask you, who created God?
Dawkins' question only makes sense in terms of a God who has been created. It doesn't make sense in terms of an uncreated God, which is the kind of God that Christians believe in. And even leaving God out of the equation, I then have a right to turn Mr. Dawkins' own question back around on him and ask, if the universe created you, then who created the universe? You see, both the theist and the atheist are both burdened with answering the same question of how did things start. What I'm hoping you'll pick up from all this is that you don't have to commit intellectual suicide to believe in a creator behind the creation. And to the extent that you don't allow for God, you'd be pretty hard-pressed to find any credible alternative explanation for how things came to be.
Well, I imagine you're quite pleased with yourself. I see you've carefully avoided the fact that Stephen Hawking, the world's most famous scientist, and who is not a theist, has recently come out in favor of a self-designing universe.
I haven't avoided it, I just didn't...
You just didn't know about it. All right. Well, let's see what Professor Hawking, the Cajun professor of physics at Cambridge, who occupies a teaching chair once held by Sir Isaac Newton, has to say about the origin of the universe. And I quote, "Because there's a law such as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. Spontaneous creation is the reason there is something instead of nothing. It's why the universe exists, why we exist. It is not necessary to invoke God to set the universe in motion." End quote. So you may have never come across his comment, but his point remains. How do you answer?
I don't know.
You don't know. I prick the balloon of your entire argument with a single pin, and you don't know. Huh.
Well, I mean, I'd like to tell you I have the perfect answer, but it doesn't shake my underlying faith.
Okay. So the greatest scientific mind in all of history says that God is not necessary, but a first semester freshman says, oh, yes, he is. Wow, you know, that's going to be a really tough choice. Well, I look forward to next week's lecture. Class is dismissed.
In our last class, I was asked a question that I couldn't answer. As Professor Radisson pointed out, Stephen Hawking is an atheist. He also wrote a book called The Grand Design, in which he says the following. Because there is a law such as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. And to be honest, I did not refute that. I mean, after all, Hawking is clearly a genius. But Professor John Lennox, who teaches mathematics and philosophy, has demonstrated that there are not one, even two, but three errors of logic contained in that one simple sentence, and it all boils down to circular reasoning. Hawking is basically saying that the universe exists because the universe needed to exist, and because the universe needed to exist, it therefore created itself. It's like this. If I say to you that I can prove that Spam is the best tasting food that's ever existed because in all of history, no food has ever tasted better, you'd probably look at me strange and say, I haven't proven anything, and you'd be right. All I've done is restate my original claim. But when Hawking claims that the universe created itself because it needed to create itself, and then offers that as an explanation as to how and why it was created, we don't immediately recognize that he's doing the same thing. But he is. Prompting Lennox to further comment, nonsense remains nonsense even when spoken by famous scientists, even though the general public assumes their statements of science.
This is the height of hubris. Are you telling me that you, a freshman, are saying that Stephen Hawking is wrong?
No. What I'm saying is that John Lennox, a professor of mathematics and philosophy, has found Professor Hawking's reasoning to be faulty, and I agree with his logic. But if you can't bear to disagree with Hawking's thinking, then I suggest that you turn to page 5 of his book, where he insists philosophy is dead. And if you're so sure of Professor Hawking's infallibility and philosophy really is dead, then, well, there's really no need for this class. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, for the last 150 years, Darwinists have been saying that God is unnecessary to explain man's existence and that evolution replaces God. But evolution only tells you what happens once you have life. So where did that something that's alive come from? Well, Darwin never really addressed it. He assumed maybe some lightning hit a stagnant pool full of the right kind of chemicals. Bingo! A living something. But it's just not that simple. You see, Darwin claimed that the ancestry of all living things came from that one single simple organism, which reproduced and was slowly modified over time into the complex life forms we view today. Which is why, after contemplating his own theory, Darwin uttered his famous statement, Natura non facit saltum, meaning, nature does not jump. Was noted, author Lee Strobel pointed out that if you can picture the entire 3.8 billion years that scientists have say life has been around as one 24-hour day, in the space of just about 90 seconds, most major animal groups suddenly appear in the forms in which they currently hold, not slowly and steadily, as Darwin predicted, but in evolutionary terms, almost instantly. So, nature does not jump becomes nature makes a giant leap. So how do theists explain this sudden outburst of new biological information? And God said, let the water teem with living creatures and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the sky. So God created the great creatures of the sea and every living and moving thing with which the water teems according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Genesis 1:20. In other words, creation happened because God said it should happen. And even what looks to our eyes to be a blind, unguided process could really be divinely controlled from start to finish.
Evil. As was said, that evil is atheism's most potent weapon against the Christian faith. And it is. After all, the very existence of evil begs the question, if God is all good and God is all powerful, why does he allow evil to exist? The answer at its core is remarkably simple. Free will. God allows evil to exist because of free will. From the Christian standpoint, God tolerates evil in this world on a temporary basis, so that one day those who choose to love him freely will dwell with him in heaven, free from the influence of evil, but with their free will intact. In other words, God's intention concerning evil is to one day destroy it.
Well, how convenient. One day, I will get rid of all the evil in the world. But until then, you just have to deal with all the wars and Holocaust, tsunamis, poverty, starvation, and AIDS. Have a nice life. Next, you'll be lecturing us on moral absolutes.
But why not? Professor Radisson, who's clearly an atheist, doesn't believe in moral absolutes. But his course syllabus says he plans to give us an exam during finals weeks. Now, I'm betting that if I manage to get an A in the exam by cheating, he'll suddenly start sounding like a Christian, insisting it's wrong to cheat, that I should have known that. And yet, what basis does he have? If my actions are calculated to help me succeed, then why shouldn't I perform them? For Christians, the fixed point of morality, what constitutes right and wrong, is a straight line that leads directly back to God.
Oh, so you're saying that we need a God to be moral, that a moral atheist is an impossibility.
No, but with no God, there's no real reason to be moral. I mean, there's not even a standard of what moral behavior is. For Christians, lying, cheating, stealing, in my example, stealing a grade I didn't earn are forbidden. It's a form of theft. But if God does not exist, as Dostoevsky famously pointed out, if God does not exist, then everything is permissible.
And not only permissible,
but pointless. If Professor Radisson is right, then all of this, all of our struggle, our debate, whatever we decide here is meaningless. I mean, our lives and ultimately our deaths are no more consequence than that of a goldfish.
This is ridiculous. So after all your talk, you're saying that it all comes down to a choice. Believe or don't believe.
That's right. That's all there is. That's all there's ever been. The only difference between your position and my position is that you take away their choice. You demand that they choose the box marked, I don't believe.
Yes, because I want to free them. Because religion is like a... It's like a mind virus that parents have passed on down to their children. And Christianity is the worst virus of all. It slowly creeps into our lives when we're weak or sick or helpless.
So religion is like a disease?
Yes. Yes, it infects everything. It's the enemy of reason.
Reason? Professor, you left reason a long time ago. What you're teaching here isn't philosophy. It's not even atheism anymore. What you're teaching is anti-theism. It's not enough that you don't believe. You need all of us to not believe with you.
Why don't you admit the truth? You just want to ensnare them in your primitive superstition.
What I want is for them to make their own choice. That's what God wants.
You have no idea how much I'm going to enjoy failing you.
Yeah, but who are you really looking to fail, Professor? Me? Or God? Do you hate God?
It's not even a question.
Okay. Why do you hate God?
This is ridiculous.
Why do you hate God? Answer the question. You've seen the science and the arguments. Science supports his existence. You know the truth. So why do you hate him? Why? It's a very simple question, Professor. Why do you hate God?
Because he took everything away from me. Yes, I hate God. All I have for him is hate.
How can you hate someone if they don't exist?
You've proven nothing.
Maybe not. They get to choose. Is God dead?
He's not dead.
God's 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 not dead.
everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html where you have access to not one but three separate chat rooms. So, you heard a little podcast of a argument scenes from a movie called God Is Not Dead. If you haven't seen that movie, I suggest you go watch it. It's pretty interesting. But nonetheless, don't run away just yet, because I'm not wanting to turn this into a religious discussion or a debate or anything like that. Just want to pose a question to people out there listening in on the radio show. And I posted a question in the chat room, and I said, what if we were gods and goddesses in training? Think about that for a second. Let that absorb in. Now, if you were listening at the beginning of the show, you heard the whole entire debate between science and I guess you would call it religion. If you wander around out there long enough on the internet, you're going to get all kinds of perspective. You're going to hear people say that all of us together are God, or we are all gods, or whatever. All right. Well, if you're into superhero shows like Superman, Supergirl, or any of the DC comics, or what's the other doggone comic deal? There's a couple of them, a couple of major ones. Anyway, I can't remember. But there's a lot of different comics with superheroes that have all kinds of superpowers. And if you watch all these series, you know, like The Flash or, you know, the Green Arrow or any of the other superheroes out there, there's so many of them to count, some of them you can't count. A lot of movie series on TV as well of people that end up with, like, incredible powers that, like, there's one that's 4,400 and they have all kinds of amazing godlike powers. And, you know, all the superheroes and all the supervillains and all that kind of stuff, and you watch these series and you see how everything plays out, and you have to ask yourself, you know, there's individuals out there who are looking towards transhumanism. Basically, the point whenever man and machine merge, a singularity, so to speak, so as to that one day you'd see human cyborgs or artificial intelligence that are merged with man to give them incredible intelligence and skills and talents and stuff. Essentially, making them appear to be gods. Aliens from outer space or something that, some people that had been evolved, if you were one of the evolutionists, people who had evolved for millions or billions of years to such advanced species that they have capabilities of godlike powers, telekinesis and superhuman strength and being able to fly and do all the things that you see all the superheroes do. So, you have to ask yourself, who would you want to have those kind of powers? Who would you literally trust to be God? Now, if you were all-knowing and all-powerful, and you had the power over life and death, and you could just at your whim just snap your fingers and somebody would die, or you could snap your fingers and somebody would be created, or whatever. Just think of all the things that you've ever seen or heard about magic and gods, from mythology to, you know, every single possible religion under the sun. Superhuman powers. Think about that. Who do you know that you would trust with that kind of power? Would you even trust yourself with that kind of power? It's a big question. Because if you look out there in this world, and you see all the things that are going on in this world, and you've heard phrases such as power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Imagine suddenly you wake up in the morning and everyone around you was a god or a goddess. They were all knowing and all powerful. And suddenly, you know, they decided they wanted the world their way. Could you imagine the epic battles that would ensue by the people that ruled their kingdoms by greed or selfishness? Imagine what this world would be like. It would be, in my view, complete and utter chaos. It'd be completely crazy. Now let's say you take all the God powers away from everyone, and you bring it all down to one God, one all-powerful, all-knowing God. Knows the future, knows the past, knows the present, knows everything that there is to know about everything under the sun, through the universe and time and space itself. And then, with this knowledge, he creates all of man and all of woman. Creates everything that is. And puts us down here on this planet, whether you believe it to be a flat earth or a sphere or whatever. And at some point in time, since we are children of this God, we're going to inherit the kingdom. Now imagine if suddenly without any kind of anything, no test, no kind of plan or nothing, this God would give us all the power. Just hand it over to us. We're back to square one again. We're all the superheroes and all the supervillains battling it out. Good versus evil. Tearing everything up. Destroying each other and just making a mess out of everything. Of course, we couldn't die because we are gods. We're immortal. We couldn't kill each other. We just suffer. It would be a world, a chaotic world of epic proportions. So think about how many people out there that you trust enough with godlike powers. Would you trust your leadership in the government with godlike powers? Even though to some extent they actually do have godlike powers. They've got people that fear them. They've got people that worship them. But imagine one person comes on the scene that actually has godlike powers and can literally wreak havoc on the government, take over and become king. And as with every dictatorship, you have no voice. You don't get to say what can you do? You can't go up against Superman. You can't fight Superman. Superman has super strength and has all these powers that he could literally crush you like dust just for merely questioning his authority. So what if we were all gods and goddesses in training? What if before we ever reached this stage of enlightenment to where we were privy to all the information, the knowledge of how the universe was created? You know, some would argue that it was all, you know, an accident. Some would argue using science that it was all just a chaotic explosion that somehow or another mixed everything in the right manner that created everything. Like magic. Poof. It's there. Just like the man said in there, atheists can't prove or they can't prove the existence of a God, and they can't disprove the existence of a God. But once again, don't want to turn this into a religious debate, or even a religious discussion for that matter. I want to talk about the power, the unchecked power of everything that is. The power of a man to be able to walk across this earth and come across a being smaller than him and have a choice whether to wreak havoc and destruction and death upon this, let's say, anthill. I got the power because these ants, they can't do nothing to me. I'm so much bigger than them, and I just crush them into the dirt. Or to take a life of one of their fellow brothers or sisters. They're weaker than me. I could just snuff them out. If you think about that kind of power, it already exists in every single man and woman out there. You already have the power. You have God-like power, literally. You have the power of the spoken word, you have the power of the pen, you have the power of your actions, you have the power of love. You can do amazing things just by opening your mouth and the words that come out of your mouth. So literally, you have God-like powers. Not to the biblical sense, to where you can literally speak into existence a world. Let there be light, and suddenly, bam, there's light. Creating all the animals and the earth and everything that you see right now. Or being able to literally snap your fingers and destroy it all at a whim. Who do you know, including yourself, that you would want to trust that kind of power? See, if we were gods and goddesses in training, we got a lot to learn as humanity. We've got this beautiful earth that we're supposed to be caretakers of. And who says that we're supposed to be caretakers of? I mean, did God say that? Or did common sense say that? Why should we take care of anything? Well, common sense would say that if you don't take care of anything, then everything will just pretty much go by the wayside. You'll pollute your planet until you die off. And then maybe or maybe not, it'll redo everything and put everything back to the way it was, and there might be new cavemen starting out and society after society getting to a certain point where they reach a singularity and literally destroy themselves. And throughout the history of all histories, wars and rumors of wars, plagues, famines, and pestilence, mankind choosing to destroy mankind. But if we were gods and goddesses in training, and we learned our lesson, and then one day went out into the universe to create our own planet, to create our own students, our own people, that we would one day hand that power over to them as well. Mankind, at this point in the game, hasn't done so well as far as moving towards graduation, so to speak. Because mankind would be too destructive with that kind of knowledge, with that kind of power. In the day that man and machine merge to the singularity, being human cyborgs mixed with artificial intelligence, the divine creation, if that's what you would want to believe it to be, as the human soul or spirit, would no longer be that anymore. It would be something different. Something perverted from nature. Of whatever you believe nature to be. Or whoever you believe nature to be. So if we're gods and goddesses in training, I believe that we're still in the preschool stage. We're still learning our ABCs, even though we are arrogant enough to believe that we are so incredibly brilliant. You know, my friend Simply Steve wrote a deal that's on top of the website. It says, nature needs no improvement. Only the arrogance of man requires change. And that's true. So, would you give godlike powers to arrogance? Or greed? Or selfishness? Or hatred? If you were God, would you want to just hand that power over to mankind using nothing more than blind faith that someday they'll figure it out and do the right thing? Or would you send them through sort of an education? Life. You know, nobody ever gets out of life alive is what they say. I say life is like wrestling a cactus. It can be really painful. But through all the things that I've seen and witnessed throughout my entire life, I believe that kind of defined the man that I am today. I believe that I learned a lot. I learned how to be humble. I learned how to want to just be a servant and a caretaker to all of my brothers and sisters around the world. I learned about the importance and the, what's the word I'm looking for? The importance of life, the value. It's so amazing to me to see, to look around and see all that is. It's such a blessing to be able to experience all that I've experienced throughout my entire life. I think if I was a god, then the world would not be very happy. Because I wouldn't be a vengeful god. I wouldn't be a jealous god. I'd probably be kind of like a joker. Because since I don't want people hurting each other, imagine this. You decide you want to shoot somebody, and I, as God, intervene. I say, okay, if that's what you want to do, go ahead and do it. You pull the trigger, the bullet flies out of the barrel, it does a quick U-turn and hits you right in the butt. Every time you pulled that trigger, tried to hurt somebody else, you would feel the pain. You wouldn't die. I wouldn't let you die. But you would feel it. Every time you tried to treat somebody poorly, it would do a big U-turn and come right back to you. If you tried to do something loving, I'd let that flow in every direction. Everything would be awesome. But if you ever tried to do something bad, if you tried to steal from somebody, you'd get hit in the butt with a lightning bolt instantaneously. Pow. So, it probably wouldn't be a good idea for me to be God. Imagine what you would do if you were God. Would you be a god of war? You know, in Greek mythology and in a lot of different places out there, a lot of different worlds, there are gods of everything. I think India or the Hindu, they have gods for just about everything under the sun. And so, if we were all gods and goddesses, and we were all selfish, and we were all still in preschool stage, could we ever figure out the meaning of it all? Could we ever figure out the right things to do? Would we even know or even care about a difference between right and wrong? Or would we just run around and snapping or blinking each other into existence and out of existence and just, having a free-for-all? Imagine some comedian who had the power of a god. They could literally do whatever he wanted to do. One second you're dressed like a man, the next second you're dressed like a woman, the next second you look like a monkey, and the next second you look like something else. See, with all the knowledge and all the gifts that we have right before our very eyes, right at our fingertips, we have an amazing amount of knowledge. There's so much knowledge out here that you couldn't fit it all in one head. Imagine one person, suddenly, bam, they know it all. They know every single thing that there is to know about everything that was ever said or going to be said or how things worked and so on and so forth. And they were the one who you would answer to for every decision that you ever made. They didn't like what you had to say? You're gone. Think about that world. Think about transhumanism. Think about if man and machine finally merged and we became these cyborgs. Where would there be a place for our soul or our conscience? Or worse yet, the computers got so incredibly smart, and their job was to do nothing more than to fix this earth. It was to fix everything that was wrong with this earth. Our current track record says that chances are, we would be like a virus. You know, I've heard people say that we're like a virus, we're like a parasite on the planet. I disagree. But nonetheless, I've heard people say that. So would you want that person to be God? Because if the artificial intelligence was designed specifically to get rid of anything that was going to potentially create harm or not be a positive influence on the Earth, then the artificial intelligence would suddenly decide that humanity, man and woman alike, would no longer need to exist. There's no need for people anymore because us computers, we got it all resolved. So we'd be thrown out there and recycled into the system. There's a couple comments down there in the TCT chat room. I'm going to have to scroll down to catch up to. Let me see where we're at here. Okay. So we're going to start with, Barbara Three Crow said, if we believe that we are made in God's image, how would we live our lives? It's a good question. There's that little sticker that says, what would Jesus do, you know? What would God do? Whatever. And you basically would base your decision on the choices that you made in life between right and wrong by what, you know, the higher deity would do. And she also said that the knowing of the existence of the goddesses was deliberately destroyed. IMO, what's that? All the God creator created is sacred and is being attacked. See, this is a really, really touchy and a tough subject to talk about. Because, like I said, I don't want to pull religion into this discussion, I just want to pose a question that, what if we were gods and goddesses in training? What if the ultimate goal for everything out here was to prepare us to go out and create another world with more people on it? You know, more beings. We go out there and we create this world. What kind of God would we be? Would your earth, if you were God and you created an earth, would it be a world of war for your amusement purposes? Would it be a world of comedy? Would it be a world of love? Personally, if I had my own world, it would have to be a world of love. I would want everybody to get along, and unfortunately, I would make them get along, because, like I said, if they tried to hurt each other, if they shot a bullet out of the end of a barrel of a gun, it would do a quick and sharp U-turn right back and hit them right in the butt. It wouldn't kill them, but they'd feel it. They'd understand what that feels like to do unto others. You know? I honestly don't believe that humanity's ready to be transhumanist or even remotely close to God like that. I mean, to have godlike powers is what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say I don't think that humanity has learned enough at this stage in the game to be trusted with that kind of power. The power over life and death, to instantaneously to be able to decide, to choose whether somebody lives or dies. History's shown so far. And the phrase is still there. The power, that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I have enough love in my heart that if I had the possibility, if I had even a remote chance that I could snap my fingers and make everything in this world perfect and nobody would ever suffer or have to die or be sick or miserable again, I would do it instantaneously. And I am positive that there are so many other people out there that would do exactly the same thing. Because I know that there are so many loving people on this planet that if they had the power of God, they'd do just that. Maybe there's something that I don't know, though. Maybe by me doing that, they would never learn it. It's kind of like the rich family that hands their kid the Ferrari and says, "Hey, there you go, I love you, here's a car to prove it." Right? Well, that kid now jumps into that Ferrari and goes out and gets into a crash and wipes out somebody's life. Instantaneously. Destroys the car, destroys the other person's car, and kills the family. Because now that powerful car that was just placed into their hands by the mom and dad, because they wanted to show how much they loved them, they just let them have it, and that's the outcome. So, why would God allow anybody to suffer? Why would he allow anybody to go to war with one another? And once again, I'm not trying to talk about any specific God or religion or anything like that. I'm just saying that the divine creator, the guardian over the dominion, the guardian over the dimension or domain or whatever you want to say, the divine entity, the wise man on the hill, the most powerful person, the most smart in person or entity in existence that we look to for answers. Why would they hand ultimate power and knowledge over to literally people like us? I shouldn't be God, because maybe you don't want to live in the world that I would create. I mean, if my love would come with a condition that you have to love each other, then there's something that I still need to learn. Because then I would be forcing my will upon you. so before we can ever actually reach that stage of enlightenment, we got a lot to learn. Gonna start trying to add some people into this call. So anyway, while I work this out here, I'm gonna make a call, and I'm gonna see how many people want to join in on this conversation, because this is a brilliant concept if you actually bear with me and you listen to what it is that I'm trying to get out. It hit me like a ton of bricks this morning. You know, what if we were gods and goddesses in training? What if we had the power to literally create or destroy at the whim? How many people do you know that you would literally trust that kind of power? Would you give your child godlike powers? What if your child was, like, mad at you one day? I don't like you didn't give me a candy bar, Mommy. Poof. Now you're a monkey. How you like that?
I'd be afraid to give myself that power.
That's what I was saying. Nobody would want me to be God, because, you know, even though I got a loving heart, I would be kind of a joker God. I would be kind of like I said, whenever, you know, if somebody decided they wanted to hurt somebody, it would do an instantaneous U-turn around, like if they fired a bullet out of a gun, it'd come flying back and it'd hit them in the butt. They wouldn't die. They'd feel the pain, but they wouldn't die. But once again, I would be forcing my will, and I would have taken away their free will, because I would have been trying to force them to love somebody. You see what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, and you know, I have these mornings like this morning where I don't have any coffee.
Oh, that's terrible.
The world could end very easily, you know. No, but seriously, I just posted in the chat. I can't see your chat, by the way. There it is. It finally showed up. Okay, good. My computer's kind of slow, but we look at the world today and we look at what we're up against. Imagine if we were up against people who were like gods.
It would be a nightmare.
Yeah, it would. I mean, you think the superheroes that you watch on TV have it rough. That's nothing compared to what it would be like if everybody was a god. And not to say, Shaziz, that I do not believe that that's where we come from. I definitely believe that we come from that all encompassing source of everything, and ergo we have all those gifts that are natural to that. Yet maybe that's why when we came here we had to leave our baggage at the door.
Yeah,
you know, because stepping into this reality with that type of power, we are fallible here in this physical existence. I mean, we are given over to too many things of the ego of life, you know.
Well,
your child goes to school and comes home, and the teacher was really not nice and embarrassed your child in school. Oh my goodness, what could happen, you know?
Yeah. Right now, we literally have what I'd like to classify as baby stages of godlike powers. Because we got the power of the spoken word. You can do things. You can control people's lives with words. You know, that's a whole lot of power. You could literally raise somebody up to the highest reaches of heaven, or drop their spirit down to the lowest depths of hell just by the words that come out of your mouth. And you see how good mankind has actually functioned with that power alone. You see what I mean? Now, the power of love that we've got, I keep going back to this picture that's on the Knights of the Round Table podcast page. And the picture is of this little bitty baby that, you know, is in really poor shape, starving to death, and the one lady that finally came in and rescued this baby and nursed him back to health, and then the picture of what the baby looked like after, you know, a year or so time of this lady doing this miracle of saving this life. That's the power of your actions, things that you can actually accomplish in this world. So just those powers alone that we have right now, as a whole, we as humanity have literally squandered away something so incredible, so amazing. So imagine if we were to suddenly be given godlike powers. I mean, like what you said earlier, superheroes type powers, you know?
Barbara made a couple of comments in the chat that there are people today who actually believe they have godlike powers, that are actually doing things that are changing our planet, that are changing our life cycles, that are changing our DNA. That is serious stuff. Without the intelligence backing it, more than proves our point.
Yeah.
You know?
And the brilliance of what she pointed out right there and what you're talking about is that these folks, they actually feel like they want to become gods. The whole transhumanism thing, to where man and machine merge, and they say that eventually we will be gods. Right?
Well, the scientist for the CRISPR technology on video, which I saw myself, and through an article that was written on this video, this interview that was done, the scientist himself said, we are going to be gods, and there's nothing that you can do about it. It doesn't matter what you think, we will be gods. Those are his words, Shaziz.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah.
That's scary, because without the wisdom behind the whole entire deal, I mean, think about, just for a second, you know, all the different gods of whatever, from every different mythology to, you know, religion or whatever. Once again, folks out there, don't panic. Don't try to run away yet. And I'm not trying to turn this into a religious subject. And I'm not trying to point you in any different direction. I'm just trying to point something really profound out that I hope that you finally get the message. But without that knowledge of everything that is, and knowing that, you know, like my question to God would be, why mosquitoes? All right, why? All they did was torment me throughout the entirety of my life. Every time I turned around, I was getting bit on the neck or the booty by a mosquito, and it was miserable. Why? You know? But without that mosquito, maybe there's something that a piece of the machine that wouldn't function properly, like when people talk about the different species that are dying off on Earth, that mankind is killing off this species. Without that species and the entirety of the machine, the food chain, so to speak, without somebody putting these things in place, knowing that this relies on that and so on down the line, then the whole system fails. You see what I'm trying to say here?
Yeah, and as far as mosquitoes and ticks and fleas and things like this that we think about and we say, what use are they? They do perform a use in nature. They take down the weak and the injured and the frail. And that's part of nature. You know, nature balances itself, there's never an out of control system that is left alone. And all of these things work in conjunction, and they're all balanced out. Problem is we, the humans who have this God complex that we can make it better, have so screwed with the environment that we have put it off balance. So all those that are in their place, like the fleas, the ticks, the mosquitoes and stuff, are now outside of their place, just like we are.
Oh, you hit something. Yeah. You hit something. I gotta hit this real quick because while it's still fresh in my head, you hit a nail there. Let's say hypothetically, you were God, all right, and suddenly here comes a fly, All right, you're the god of your planet, and there's this fly comes by, and it's buzzing around your face, and you're getting all frustrated, and I can't stand flies. They annoy the heck out of me. And so suddenly, bam, you snap your finger, and every single fly on this planet's gone. Scientifically, what do you think that's going to do to nature?
It will prevent nature from breaking down, when something dies, breaking it down, producing.
Your planet will stink.
Well, and it won't go back to the earth. The same thing with slugs. With all these things, they serve a purpose. We, in our ego-led minds, don't take the time to actually look and say, well, what is the purpose of that? Because, like you said, the mosquito's gonna bite me on the butt. I'm just gonna kill the little booger, you know?
Yep.
That's his use, killed by me. We don't sit to think that, well, you know, yeah, these are pests and they are bothersome, but they do serve a purpose. And it's a very crucial purpose. This ecosystem that is created on this earth is perfect in every way. There is nothing that man can ever do that can in any way come close to the perfection.
That's right.
That we have here. And everything has a purpose. To say that something doesn't just because it aggravates us is very immature. It shows a lack of understanding, a lack of we don't have the intelligence. Let's just face it. Like I said, when we came here, we dropped our little suitcase, our little briefcase that our God little case at the door. You know, and we walk through as just plain humans.
Yeah, and that one example that I just gave to you about the fly, had you to snap your fingers and every single fly would have, been gone, you would have destroyed your entire ecosystem with
yeah.
that one act. So if we're gods
exactly.
and gods, goddesses in training, before we ever get anywhere close to that kind of power to where we can say suddenly all flies are gone off this earth because they aggravate me, we got to know what the consequences of every one of our actions is going to be. Am I wrong?
Right. That fly goes into that waste, into that carcass, into that refuse, and it lays its eggs, and those eggs begin to eat that refuse, that carcass, and returns it to the earth, right?
Yeah.
So there's your purpose. But it's not, you know, even the things that we don't understand, that should prove to us even more so, don't you think, Shaziz?
Oh, yeah.
That we got no business playing God, you know?
That's why these scientists out there and these people who have these this arrogance about them that think that they're, you know, so much smarter than everybody else on this planet, they still don't know everything that there is to know. They're still trying to figure it out. And in the process of trying to figure it out, they're trying to tamper with nature. And when you tamper with nature, nature's always going to win. Always.
Yeah, always. Always. And you know, the harm that we see being done to the earth right now, the last couple of days, there's been a lot of good information coming out from scientists across the board about the chemtrails and this weather modification that's being done. And they're showing us, because they're doing the tests now that prove that these chemtrails are harming us. This nanotechnology that's being used in these chemtrails is going into the roots of the trees, into the soil, into the plants, into the animals, into us. And it is affecting us. Now, these scientists who are doing this, who are actually putting this into implementation, are being fought by scientists who are standing up saying, wait, this is not right, this is wrong. So we have a check and balance in this system. We are our own check and balance. We have the ability to become more intelligent through this, to see the wrong that is being done. This is our part in the little God particle that we can talk about.
Yeah.
That, yeah, we can be gods and goddesses in this respect, to stand up and fight for the natural ecology and the natural systems against the encroachment of humans who think they're gods, right?
Yeah.
So in a way, there is a way that we can stand up as gods and goddesses in this respect. And we are. And what we do on the radios and things like this to bring this information to people, to keep putting it out there, that's our part to play in the gods and goddesses, you know?
Yeah, the perspective and the wisdom that we bring to the table that would at least give somebody the option to, you know, at least think about something before they, you know, do something. That, to me, is worth the time spent. I mean, science talks about designer babies. Do you realize how dangerous that is? How scary that thought is? Because now you can literally design a baby to be perfection. You know, you can have this baby with perfect blue eyes and blonde hair or whatever. And then at some point, that perfect baby grows up believing its own perfection, and your flaws are now a hindrance to a perfect world. And suddenly, you're no longer needed. All right, you got dark hair and dark eyes, and you're not one of them anymore. You see the danger that lies there? Somebody on this planet one time thought that that would be the perfect race, and so anything that wasn't that was not worthy of being on this planet, if you understand what I'm saying.
You remember Star Trek?
Yeah.
The planet, when they had the war between these two people on this planet, and they were both black and white.
Yeah.
But one half of one face, like the right side was black and the left side was white, and the other, the left side was black and the right side was white. And they were continuously at war with each other because, you couldn't be different like that. One was wrong and the other was right. Well, that's where we are today.
Yep.
I mean, that's what our whole basis for science is based on, is that, we don't want to be who we are. We want to be the God. We don't want to be gods and goddesses, and be able to function within the natural ecosystem. We want to be the God and change the God's natural plan.
Yep.
And the others of us are saying, wait, no, dude, we're all the same. We all live on this planet, and we all need to get along, and we all need to let this planet do what it does.
Oh, lost your sound there.
There's no separation between us. This, every time I see people standing there galvanized against each other on these points of view, like with chemtrails, normal people like me, you know, I don't have a PhD. I didn't go to college to learn about science and the atmosphere and engineering, geoengineering and things like this. But I have a mind, and I think, and I see, and I look, and I see what's happening. And I see the physical effects that I'm suffering, and that the animals, the trees, and the plants, that nature is suffering around me. And I can say, this isn't right. But the other guys who think they're different from us because of they went to school to learn this stuff.
Well, I think you got a PhD in the understanding of life and nature.
Well, yeah. So because... That's the God part of us, right?
Yeah, you've been going through school. We've all been going through school since the day we showed up here. It's all learning experience. Every bit of what we've went through basically puts us to what and who we are today, you know? The choices that we've made, the choices that other people have made for us, and so on.
Well, what we have to ask, too, we have to ask these guys, why? Why are you doing this? Why is it important for you to change the system? What is broken in the system that you need to change? And how are the changes that you are putting in here that are changing this system going to keep this system intact? You know, these are questions that need to be asked, and nobody can answer those because if you come in and change a perfect system, it's no longer perfect, and nothing you do from that point on is going to be an improvement.
Yep.
It's going to be a detriment. So there you have, and you're looking at these people and you're saying, okay, so you want to change the climate. Why? Why do you want to change the climate? There is no real reason behind that. Shaziz, the only reason that they could have for doing that is because it's a weapon.
Yep, that's it. And their arrogance believes that they believe that the ends justify the means, and it's okay to do whatever it takes in order to one day bring about, you know, a united world. And they're
but everybody's suffering from what they're doing, even themselves.
Yep.
So, yeah, the insanity of it, you know.
Barbara said in the chat room, maybe being gods and goddesses is about wisdom, caring, and doing the right thing for the whole world. Just saying. And she said, oh, on the designer babies and even specific IQs, you know, perfect babies. Look, folks, I know it sounds like a perfect world to try to, you know, improve upon nature. Nature needs no improvement. You know, nature is perfection. However you believe nature got here. Without, you know, like I go out there and I take my car and I see this one object under the hood of my car that just, you know, I don't like it. It's too big, it's too bulky, it's an eyesore. So I yank that thing out. Well, now that machine isn't going to function like it was designed. And so, like the example we gave earlier, Patty sees a fly aggravating the heck out of her, and she decides suddenly to use her god powers. Poof, all the flies on the planet are gone now. There's nothing to break down whatever animal you ran over with your car. You know, so now the whole planet begins to stink, and disease runs amok, and the machine falls apart. Everything that was designed for a purpose now can no longer, it's like the pieces of the puzzle that we keep talking about on this show. You're one of those pieces of the puzzle, and without you, that entire picture of all creation can't be finished. You'll have a picture, you have a big, beautiful picture, but that one little corner is always going to be gone because you're not there anymore. And so who would you want to give godlike powers to? If you were the divine creator of this world, would you want your brother or your sister or a total stranger or anybody in this world? Is there anyone in this world that you trust enough? And that includes me. Would you trust me with God powers, knowing the kind of joker I am? I just told you that if you tried to shoot somebody, the bullet would come back around and hit you in the booty. Would you trust me? I wouldn't trust me.
Ow! Sorry. I just had that picture in my mind.
Yeah, every time you try to do anything mean to somebody, I would make it come right back on you. You wouldn't die. You'd feel it. It'd probably hurt like heck, but you ain't gonna die. You're gonna feel it, and you're gonna know what it feels like to do unto others. And you'll have it done unto you. Now, I don't know what your views are on things. Maybe you might want to do things a little bit different. Everybody who talks like me, you might be aggravated. The tone of my voice might be like fingers on a chalkboard, and suddenly, poof, you change me or you disappear me or whatever, and suddenly that other piece of the puzzle's gone again. We're not ready to be gods.
We can't even go down the road in traffic without losing our cool.
Yeah.
You know,
road raging. What would you do? You'd explode the car in front of you. Oh, that, let that be a lesson to you. And then somebody beside you who has a different point of view looks over you and says, oh, you think you're God? Well, look, poof, I just blew your car up too.
Yeah, life would be over in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, all the differences of opinions and differences between blacks and whites and yellows and all the different color spectrums of all the different races and species or whatever. Imagine what we would do to one another just because we disagreed. We can't even get along Republican and Democrat, or, you know, atheist versus Christian versus Buddhist versus Hindu, Muslim, or whatever. We argue over everything under the sun. We can't even agree on what to have for breakfast, let alone how we should utilize our God powers to literally bring about a heaven on earth. Maybe you know, we don't want a heaven on earth.
It's really odd too, because we have, no matter what you call the great mystery, whether you call the great mystery God, Jehovah, whatever, Buddha, the creator. We know that this creator, this great mystery, has created a place of perfection, a place of such grand achievement of wisdom and of harmony. We look at nature and we see this played out. We don't have to guess that it was done. We see it in its natural way, how perfect it is. Yet here we stand as human beings looking at each other and picking apart every aspect of each other's lives to say, you're wrong, you're right, you're not even close, your skin color is wrong, the way you pray is wrong, the way you learn is wrong, the way you sing is wrong, the way you walk is wrong. I mean, we take a perfect system and we disregard our place within this perfect system and make ourselves imperfect.
Yeah, we distort
in the process.
It.
And then we sit there and we say, what the heck is going on? You know? It's like, duh. You know? Maybe it's us. Maybe we don't get the picture right. Maybe we have overstepped our bounds and thought that we were something and to do and be all, and we're not. Maybe we're just a part of the whole, and we need to step back and we need to see ourselves in perfection of nature, what our true place is within nature, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what we need to do, but we're not going to do it because we've got this idea that we know better than the creator that created all of this.
Somebody,
how crazy is that?
Somebody run outside right now. Grab your camera, run outside right now and take a picture of the very first thing you see. Alright? And then take that picture, put it in one of your computer programs like Paintbrush. And take out every single color that you don't like. Take it out. Alright? Take them all out. If your favorite color is black, then make the whole entire picture black. If your favorite picture is white, then make the whole picture white. Or make it red. Whatever. Whatever your favorite color is. Take everything out that you don't like out of that picture. And I submit to you that that picture that you just took out there, it's never ever going to be complete. So there's black people on the planet, there's white people on the planet, there's yellow people on the planet, there's red people on the planet, there's all different colors of people on the planet. These are all pieces of the puzzle. Take any of those colors out, that picture's never going to be complete. Never. Not what the grand design of everything that is out there that you've seen so far. You pick and choose what you want in this world, then you just take out what you don't want, and the whole entire picture that was laid down before us, the beauty that is everything out there, it's never going to meet its true glory. It can't. Am I wrong?
No. And just another analogy. You take and you go out with your easel and your canvas and your paints and you look at nature and you paint that beautiful picture. The epitome of nature, it's as if you're looking at nature itself and you see the beauty of it. And then a guy comes along and says, wait a minute, I think you need more birds in there. And another guy comes along and says, no, you don't have enough water in there. Let me put some water in there. And the other guy comes along and says, well, you need mountains in there and you need snow on the mountains. And pretty soon, your picture is so screwed up because everybody's put their imprint on it instead of making their own that you don't know what you're looking at. It's just a big blob, you know? So it's the same thing with nature. I mean, we look at nature, we see the perfection of it, and what's our thoughts? Let's go in and cut that tree down. Let's go in and clear cut that frickin' forest, and let's go in and dig a hole in the earth. And then after it's done, we sit there and we look at it and we say, look how horrible that is.
Yeah, here's an idea. Since we know that honeybees, they do a lot of work and they pollinate a lot of trees out there and they keep the flowers, the plants, germinated and everything like that. if we give the honeybees some methamphetamines, we can get them to do it quicker, and that would make more food around the planet, all right? So we got bees that are flying around at the speed of light, zing, 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 right? And God forbid if you get in one of their way and they decide to sting you on the neck on the way by, because you can't even swat at them. It's too late. You done. By the time you feel the pain, they're already over there germinating a plant.
Well, I think we can agree. I think we can agree in unison that if we were in control of nature, we'd have already screwed it up.
Oh, yeah.
1,000 times over.
It'd be a mess. We'd have man-eating grasshoppers, man.
If everyone was. Thank goodness that there's only not a lot of psychopaths that are willing to do this. But we're coming to a point in our existence to where we have to make some really crucial decisions on what we're going to do here, and we need to get a consensus as to how far are we willing to go in the destruction of this environment before we decide that we've gone too far.
Yep.
This is where we're at right now. Nobody is listening. Nobody is paying attention. Like I said, Shaziz, I just watched two really good, brilliant films, videos on scientists that have stepped forward to counteract this global warming, this climate manipulation schemes that are going on, with hard evidence, with factual documentation, with names and dates and laws and permits to these companies that are doing this. This is not a government controlled issue here. This is climate control to the highest bidder. These are private industries that are able to do this. Now, the people who live in these areas have every right to be informed and to make the decisions to either allow this in their environment or not, except for one thing. It doesn't stop over my state. Even if the company in my state is the one that's chemtrailing in my skies, Missouri is being affected.
Yep.
Colorado is being affected. Oklahoma is being affected. Every animal, every species of life is being affected. So we're not hearing the consensus from the world. We're only hearing the consensus from these corporate people who are saying it's okay, it'll be all right, nothing's wrong. But we have all the rest of the people who are uninformed. If they were informed, would they make the right decision? If they did know that this is what is causing their trees to die, if they did know that this is why you can't get crops to grow, if they did know that this is why your fish are dying, if they did know that this is why you have that persistent cough that you can't get rid of, that when you go to the doctor, he can't tell you exactly what's wrong anymore, if they did know this, Shaziz, would they make the change? Would they stand up?
Well, I would hope so. I would hope that wisdom would kick in and they would understand the urgency of why it is that we really seriously need to work in harmony with nature, because after all, this is the boat that we're all floating on, whether you think in time and space or whatever. If you start poking holes in the boat and the boat goes down, it's all hands on ship. That's why I never understood the elite doing the things that they do, you know, taking us to war, you know, because they got to live in the same world that we live in. Their children, their grandchildren, all their future generations have to live in the same world that we're living in. And so if they go out and they nuke the planet, you know, we're all going to be sick together. We're all going to die together. You see what I'm saying? It's to me, it's total insanity to go out and start a war and think that you're going to bring about peace by force, that you're going to cause somebody to finally see your way of your point of view, and they're going to do what you want them to do. Well, no, that's not what's going to happen. The proof of that is that one story I keep telling about the little Palestinian girls. The two little Palestinian girls were sitting there, and the reporter asked the Palestinian girls, "Do you ever want peace with Israel?" And they said, "No, we don't want peace with Israel. We hate Israel. They killed our mommy and daddy." But hold on, flip that over on the other side of the fence. Ask the two little Israel girls the same exact question, and they will give you the same exact answer. And so every time you go over in war with somebody, you may defeat them. You may destroy their army and their infrastructure and all that, but you just made more enemies. Those children will be the future fighters of the world. And that chain will never be broken.
You know, it's insanity to think that the history that we have, as far back as we can go, Shaziz, as far back as you can go, we have always had war, and people have fought war with war, right?
Yep.
So we have a whole lifespan of human race proves this point out, that war begets war, begets war, begets war, and the fallacy that people live under, like, if we can just war enough, we can finally come to peace, is a misnomer and is so absurd on the face of it. What we need to do is fight war with peace. You know, that's never been tried. Why the heck not? Because the people... If you ask those two little girls, what if we could bring you peace today for you and Israel, and there would be no war between anyone? I bet you those little girls would say, that'll work.
Yeah.
You know?
You're right.
But they aren't given that option.
So the question is, what if we were gods and goddesses in training? Right now, are we ready as trainees to be handed over any more power than we've already been given? We got the power of the spoken word, we got the power of the pen, we got the power of our actions, and we got the power of love if we choose to use it. We're supposed to be caretakers of one another and the animals and all of nature, and we're supposed to be trying to learn how to live in perfect harmony with each other. How have we fared to this point?
Patty? Well, and we have the facts. You know, Tracy just put something in, which is really... pertinent. You can't ask a child a question like that and expect that child to give an opinion that is from themselves. It's what they've learned, right?
Yeah.
If you're born into a system where war is the only option, where from the time you take your first breath until you die, all you know are bombs and suffering and destruction, at the hands of one or the other. And it is a two-way street. You can't have a one-sided war, right? One has to fight a war, right?
Yeah, there's winners and losers on both sides.
Yeah, so if we have the instruments to bring peace, you know, just that they say, okay, well, see, what it is the Palestinians want this piece of land to live, and Israel wants their piece of land to live, and there's just not enough room. Give me a break. Give me a break. You know, that's the most imbecilic thing I've ever heard. Look at this earth. Tell me there's not enough room for everybody. I know they like to tell you, oh, there's 8 billion people on here and it's way too crowded and da-da-da-da-da. It's not way too crowded, and it's a misnomer. We're all being led down the rabbit hole.
Well,
no overpopulation.
I say crazy like this earth could withstand 10 times the population and still be able to feed and house and clothe every single living soul on this planet. And people look at me cross-eyed like I'm crazy. But here's the thing. If we got overpopulated, if we really seriously got overpopulated, nature would do what nature does best. It's just,
exactly.
If you go look at the fish out there, if you got a billion fish in one tiny pond, the oxygen levels will drop in that pond until majority of all those fish die off.
Well, let's do the math. Okay? How many people are killed in war across this globe every day?
Oh.
How many children, people die of starvation across this world every day? How many people die because of illnesses and cancers that are brought on by this corporate type society? How many people die, just in natural causes every day, in auto accidents, in plane accidents, train accidents, across the globe every single day?
Or just sheer stupidity, jumping off a roof, a three-story building with an umbrella, thinking it was going to float.
Right. The thing of it is that we put our own selves in check in that way. You know, we kill millions of each other every day, every single day across the globe. Maybe if there was no more death and there was only birth, we would have an issue there with overpopulation at one time or another. But again, I think that nature would take its course, because nature is a perfect system within itself, and it cleanses and it rearranges. It's a dynamic system. Mountains move, seas move, things like this. But the thing of it is that we are so irresponsible in the way we look at life. We don't even have a correct perspective of life. We don't have a correct perspective of each other. We are skewed. We are skewed from the time we're born. We go to school and we learn how the differences separate each and every one of us, and we're given these differences, and we're told to cultivate them within ourselves. Depending on where we're born and where we're raised, we have the Native Americans who are angry at the whites because they came in and committed genocide against them. We are angry. We have the blacks who are angry against the whites because they came in and stepped into their slave trade and everything and did this, put them into slavery. We have the Middle Eastern people who are mad at the colonialists or the expansionists. We have the Russians who are mad at the Ukrainians. We have the, you know, on and on and on and on and on and on and on. We have done nothing but exploit each other from the time of our existence.
You know,
from
the
far back as you can go.
You know, the ironic thing about what you're talking about is that if you took one baby from every single race, don't matter what color it is, or every single race, all right, without any influence, this baby was just born and maybe 6-7 months old or whatever. You put all these babies in the same playpen. They don't hate each other. That's perfection. That's what nature designed right out of the gate. Right out of the gate, they don't know differences. They don't disrespect each other. They don't despise or want to kill each other. They don't think there's anything different than that baby over there, because if you look at your own eyes, unless you're looking down at your body, you don't know what color you are. And those babies are just now starting to learn everything that there is to learn. All right? And maybe one day they'll look down at their hand and say, "Why does your hand look different than mine?" You know? "Oh, I don't know. Well, I like yours better than mine." But that's the key is that we're not born into this world to hate each other. We're taught. We're taught all the differences. You're not the same as this kid over there. That's a black child, and you're a white child, and that's an Indian
child. And it's
child.
Reinforced.
Yeah,
it's reinforced. You know, you look at your mainstream media. You know, they reinforce. They make sure that we have enough differences on a constant, and they throw in fear on top of that, and a little bit on top of that. You know, fear your neighbor, fear your neighbor. When you look at nature, I was going to bring this up, Shaziz. You ever seen? You see it all the time, actually. You see a raccoon that finds a baby possum or something, you know, and it will take it and it will suckle it. Possibly not a possum, because that would be kind of rough because of the pouch and all this. But anyway, you see other species taking babies from even their enemies, supposedly, and taking them in and raising them as their own. Squirrels and cats you know, things like this.
If you raise a kitten and a puppy together, they're naturally, they're not going to get along, you know, if they were, you know, to their own devices or taught a certain way, you know, I hate cats, I got to kill them. But look how many puppies and kittens that you've seen playing together. And even when they spent a lifetime together, they don't get old and decide suddenly they hate each other and they want to fight and kill each other.
It's the imprints that are made upon them.
Yeah.
In their young lives, you know. A dog will think he's a cat. A chicken will think he's a duck, you know. Even though they don't look alike, they don't sound alike, they don't speak the same language, but they function together as a family, as a unit. And this is what we were meant to do. This is how we were meant to live. And something got skewed along the way. So now we have so many aspects of separation between us. Sometimes I think that we can never bring it back together because there are so many reasons that we can choose from to hate each other, you know? And it's a shame because there's no reason, none of these reasons make any real sense. Yet, we do have an enemy, a real enemy on this earth with us. And we ignore that enemy totally. We completely disregard it. And instead, we attack each other. You know? And we know who that enemy is.
Yep.
We know that this enemy is the control, the one behind the curtain, the one putting out all of these memes, putting out all of this information as to why we should hate each other. But instead of focusing on getting rid of that, instead we do exactly what that control wants, and we attack each other. And not only do we attack each other in a physical sense of, hey, you're different from me, you don't say the same things I say, you don't look the same as me, you don't dress the same as me, and all of these other aspects, but we are attacking each other and our environment, the whole ecosystem that keeps us alive.
And the sad thing about this whole deal is, throughout history, we have been warned over and over again, not just by history itself, but by what some people would call prophets, what some people, you know, would call visionaries or whatever. Like that clip that I keep playing of Paul Harvey, what he said back in 1965, I want anybody out there to say you ain't seeing what he said in 1965 here in the year 2017. Now, something was behind all that. There's some sort of power on that, whether you want to call it the devil or you want to call it evil, a spirit of evil, or whatever you want to say. Something was behind the reason why there's a person that is the different color than me that thinks that I'm not as good as them or whatever, vice versa. Something was behind that initial hatred that was poured out into the earth, you know, that negativity plague, like I like to say.
Well, yeah, and Shaziz, we sit here and we say, you know, you and me and other people like us, and there's plenty of people like us, and we say that there's no need for this. Yet there are people who, even if you ask them, the people who are doing these chemtrails, you know, and we went to them, these corporation heads, these people that actually run these corporations, and we sat down with them and we said, look what you're doing. Why are you doing this? Can you please stop? They wouldn't do that because they are geared to a different system than we are. They don't see the same thing, the same thing that we see. And I do believe, I'm not one to say there is a devil. Right? I'm not one to say that. I do believe there's evil. And I do believe that man creates evil. As far as all the evils that are visited upon this earth, they were done by the hand of man. Yet,
yep.
Yet, right now, as I sit here, I have to see within myself, and my own logic tells me that there is something behind this. Yeah. That it is not just man himself who moves this way. There is something that enters into the mind of man and the heart of man that controls this, because the simplicity of the arguments for leaving the system alone, for leaving the earth to do its own thing, for respect of the earth, for respect of all living things, cannot be in any way debated. Nope. To me, it's illogical. Any other way of dealing with life is illogical in this sense. And to have these scientists, to have these generals and these presidents and these bankers and all of those who are behind this mechanism so dead set on not only committed to war, but committed to genocide.
Yeah.
Committed to genocide of the planet. This is something that goes beyond our own human nature. There is something behind this. I can't deny that.
Well, in science they say that for every positive is a negative out there. There's an opposite side of everything. And even in all the different debates and all the different views on life and opinions or whatever. But, you know, somewhere along the line, we lost balance. We lost our ability to try to balance out the scales of justice and to work together with nature. There was a time when humans had no choice but to work with nature. But the further they got in, the more advanced society got, the more arrogant they become, and then the belief that they suddenly believe that they are gods, and that any ends would justify the means because they are more intelligent than this group over here. So slavery came about. You know, suddenly you've got people that, because they're different and considered to be inferior, we can make these folks work for us. They're not even human. You know, that thought came from somewhere. It came from some negative realm. It don't matter whether you want to think it's the devil or just the evil or some wicked spirit or whatever, the negative side of the positive, which could have been in life. We could have went over and we could have been friends with these people, and we could have supported them, and we could have took care of them, and the world would be whole different. We wouldn't even be talking about, you know, color differences. But somewhere or another along the line, man made this faulty choice that... Have you ever had a perfect margarita?
Not me.
Well, any kind of drink that you can possibly think of out there. There's...
Cup of coffee.
Yeah, perfect cup of coffee. It's got just the right amount of cream in it. It's got just the right amount of sugar. And it tastes really good all the way from start to finish. Well, then somebody came along and they said, well, hey, look, you know what? You ought to try your coffee with a little salt in it. Started putting a salt shaker over there. That just kind of blew things out of the water. And that's kind of what's been going on throughout the history of time. Somebody always thought that they could improve on nature. They always thought that they could improve on one another. I can teach you how to be better than you. Is there anybody in this world, Patty, that can teach you how to be better than you can teach yourself how to be better?
Well, actually, no, as far as what you're saying there. But, I can say that this negative force that you're talking about, it's never been weakened. It's never been non-existent. It's never been threatened, with extinction. It's been here from the get-go, and the same thing can be said for the light. It's never been extinguished. It's never been diluted. The thing of it is that It's been, we have been diametrically opposed from the beginning of life on this planet. And there's a reason for that. You know, when we look at nature, we see that nature is not gentle at all. Nature is very harsh.
Yes, brutal.
Yes, it is very, very brutal. But everything that lives within nature acquiesces to this system. Being born into the system of nature, life understands that it will be sacrificed if it does not, if it finds its place in the wrong place or at the wrong time or whatever. This is acceptable, and it's done only for the benefit of life. If one thing dies, it is only to the benefit of other life. So there is an exchange of life. Death creates life. Life creates death. It's a system that is whole, and that's the way it works. We, however, ever since our beginnings, have stepped outside of that. Ever since the beginnings of our history, if we go and we look back, we have stepped outside of that perfect system of life and death and death and life. We have created a world separate on this living planet. And that's where we have gone wrong. I believe in technology. I believe in the ability to step up in evolution, to step up in the evolution of the mind and the body and the spirit. I believe that technology is a tool that is useful and that should not be forgotten or put away. But I do believe that we have been engineered to use the most harmful of systems, even when we have tried to develop the other systems that are more compatible and more beneficial. We have been forced into utilizing these technologies that bring harm, that bring destruction, time and time and time and time and time again. Yeah. And like Yusha's is, you have the mind that creates these systems of energy that are beneficial, that are not harmful. And there are others that create systems of permaculture that are beneficial, that are not harmful. These are technologies, health systems, you name it, we've got it, that are beneficial instead of the harmful industries that we have. Yet, here we are today with these beneficial systems sequestered into a small capsule-sized existence, to where some can get in there and some can utilize this technology, but by far not the mass of people. We cannot create the utopia that we know we can exist, you know, within. We are prevented from doing that by the same mechanism that was there from the very beginning.
Yep.
That tells us that no, you can only take from this larger, this very big contingent, this construct of harmful technologies. These are the only things that we will allow. And every time you try to step out of your little system and implement your benefit into the earth, we're going to stomp you down. And we're going to take you out.
And that's why when I say things like, I believe that as humanity, we have the potential to literally bring about a heaven on earth, a utopia, so to speak, it comes with an exception. Because this can't be done on a one-on-one scale. It can't be done by a group or a government or, you know, just a small, a few individuals of the planet. somehow or another, we have to figure out that each and every living soul on this planet, including the plants and the animals and all of nature, are like a machine. You know, like every one of them is like a cog in a machine. And if you take one gear out of that machine, it can never function to its true capability. So without that one mad science guy with a good idea, or the one person that is the artist that can make it look good, you know, we could never even scratch the surface of what our Creator did. This artwork that you look around, the amazing self-contained biosphere of epic proportions. I mean, we got more resources necessary. We've got more knowledge than ever needed to literally take all this knowledge and all of our combined talents and all of our pieces of the puzzle to literally become the best that we could possibly be and complete the picture. To meet that perfection, we were designed from perfection. And if you take that perfection and you put it all back together in the possibilities that were given to us, all the potential resources available to us, we could literally bring about a heaven on earth. We could make this world so wonderful for every living soul on this planet. But the key to the whole deal, I think the grand scheme of things behind the scenes, the key to the reason why we haven't succeeded to this point is because we've missed out on one important lesson. We can't do it alone. We can't do it by ourselves.
For those people who are always telling us, you know, they tell me all the time, oh, that's your utopian dream. Utopia is just a dream. It's not possible. I tell them, prove it. Prove to me it's not possible.
Yeah, prove it by trying it.
And they say, well, look at the world today. I said, have we tried to go to that place of utopia? No, we can't do it. Why can't we do it? Well, because the world isn't geared that way. Why isn't the world geared that way? You know, these are questions that can go around for around, but you still haven't answered my question. You know, you still haven't proven to me that we can't have utopia. I've just told you that I believe that we can, and I've told you that this is how I believe we can do this, and you're telling me on the face of that, that it's not possible. But the only reason you're giving me for that is because we've never done it before.
That's right. Never
and
even attempted.
To me, right. Yeah. To me, that says that, you know, you've never even seriously thought about this. And if you did, perhaps if we could get the people to realize that it's not a pipe dream. This is reality that we create, not the reality they've created for us. Our reality is for utopia. It's where we came from. How do you think this planet started off? You know? We stepped away from utopia. It existed before we decided to become gods and goddesses, right?
Yeah.
Before we decided to step outside of ourselves and our place within this utopia. So if we don't have a utopia now, it's because we decided not to have a utopia.
That's right. And if we're so
and
smart, if we are the gods and goddesses that you talked about, if we're so smart, why is the world still in a mess?
Exactly. And if we stepped away from this utopia, why can't we step back?
Yeah. I think that now that we've already jumped in the pool, it's a matter of we got to swim to the shore. Otherwise, we're just going to drown in our own pool. You know, it's as simple as that, folks. You know, we've pointed out time and time again so many different alternative methods to doing things that have been done wrong for years and years, but yet people put their faith and their belief in governments and, you know, groups and stuff that they're willing to allow the ends to justify the means for a little bit of safety and comfort. You know, I don't have to worry about the bad guy because if some other nation tries to attack me, my government will mop them, you know. Walk down your own neighborhood. Seriously. Walk down your own neighborhood and tell me how peaceful you really feel in your own neighborhood. And I know some of you live in some really rough neighborhoods. Some of you are going to get some offers, and some of you are going to get some threats walking in your own neighborhood. What do you think?
Yeah, is this what we want? Is this, do you really want that? No, of course not. Then why aren't you changing it?
Yeah.
You know, well, I don't have the money. Then do it without money. You know, maybe money is the issue. Maybe money is the problem. Maybe the fact that we think that we have to have this piece of paper in order to live our lives is really the main culprit. Maybe we ought to realize that, hey, we all came from a place where money didn't exist, and we lived in peace and abundance and utopia, and then we brought in all of these constructs of this money system, this control system, and look how bad we screwed it up. Why are you so afraid of stepping away from it? Why are you so afraid of stepping away from the system that's killing you? If you know that there is another system that still exists, that utopia exists right now. We're just not part of it. Yeah. And we are destroying it by being a part from it. Maybe if we go back to it...
A young man named Justin wants to join in with us.
Come on in.
All right, I'm going to add him to the call here. I didn't mean to cut you off there because you was on a brilliant roll there. This subject, you know, when I started off, I posed a question, and I asked, "What if we were gods and goddesses in training?" All right, and I want you to literally look inside yourself and ask yourself the question: if I'm in training, what grade am I in? You know, in school, you got preschool and kindergarten all the way up to 12th grade and on into college and, you know, whatever you learn throughout life. So you're being schooled from the time you start till the time you finish. You're learning something. We're learning something today. Even when you're out of school and you think you know everything that there is, no, you realize you don't, because somebody comes along that has a little bit more insight than you had and might have studied something you didn't study. That's the brilliance of this entire system, that we can't do it alone. We can't do this by ourselves. But nonetheless, even the most hardcore critic and the most hardcore negative person who says that, oh no, it'll never be done, you can't do it, doomsday's coming, there's nothing we can do or say about it, it's written in stone and this is exactly how it's going to play out. But if you look at all the facts, everything we've talked about on this show, you look at the world in general, you look at all the resources available, the earth is 3/4 covered in water, you look at how water actually functions and how it separates into its different elements and everything that nature has provided, and you look at all the people out there with all the talents and all the skills and gifts and visions and dreams and stuff, and you tell me that if they weren't to take and focus their energies and utilize everything that was given to us in the proper manner, everyone could have a house, everyone could have food and clothing and shelter, and in hot climates they could be cool, in cold climates they could be warm. We have the technology and all the knowledge and all the resources and all the talent and skills necessary to do so. You tell me that it cannot be done. You see what I'm saying? Can you see any flaw in what I just said, Patty? Are you still there? Yeah, we lost sound over there somehow. Justin, are you in there yet?
I'm here.
Oh. Yeah, I'm here.
Can you see any flaw in what I just pointed out? The possibility? You know, the likelihood and the plausibility of everybody coming together and doing the right thing at this point in the game, it doesn't look like it's possible. And I could understand the negative naysayers that say, oh, well, no, you'll never get that to happen. No, that's not. We've always worried. We're hateful people. You know, whatever. But undeniably, using science alone, we have everything necessary to literally boldly go where no man has ever gone before. we can change all the choices that we've made in the past and move on forward and do nothing but right all the way until we literally bring about a utopia. And we don't have to kill nobody to do it. You see what I mean? Don't everybody jump to the microphone at once. I wouldn't want you to chip a tooth.
Well, I was wanting to hear what
I'm
Justin
just
had to
say.
Go ahead,
yeah,
Justin.
I'm just getting set up.
Oh,
he's getting my headset.
All right, well, let us know when you're ready. But the fact is we do have the potential. We do have the capability to go in both directions. We could either take this world down the rabbit hole into the great abyss in the most brutal fashion possible, or we can literally start putting this planet together and helping nature along and doing what we do best and using our talents to make this world so much better than what it is.
We see it's like cognitive dissonance. You know, you tell people that there is a better way, and they say, no, we can't get there. There's just no possible way we'll ever get there. But then they'll turn around and they'll say, you know, the sky's the limit. We can do anything we want.
Yeah.
Wait. But we can't move toward a utopian type society. No, it can't do that.
Some people say that we are gods. Some people say that we are divine creatures, and some people say that we are all together, we make up God. Alright? Well, if that's the case, and though some people are saying that, why isn't it that we can't figure out that we could get to that point of utopia, the heaven on earth that we talk about? Seriously, if we're all knowing, if all these scientists are so wise, and they know all the laws of physics, and they have figured nature out to the extent, why would they spray crud in the air that could potentially kill off the bees, which is one of the cogs in the machine necessary to keep all the trees and plants growing? You see what I'm saying?
Well, it's even more insidious than that. Not only are they killing off the bees and other beneficial insects, but they're creating artificial replacements.
Yeah.
As if this is acceptable.
Super bugs. The fly that we talked about earlier now has become a god. And if he don't like you, he snaps his little finger and bam, you're gone.
Yeah.
What about this? What about we do a flip-flop here, right? Suddenly man is not the hunter, but the hunted. All the animals on the planet finally say, all right, you want to play that? Enough's enough. And they decide to declare war on humanity. Could you imagine 1,000 tigers running after one person? Could you imagine 1,000 snakes crawling up in bed with you at night? Could you imagine the roles being reversed, and instead of you stomping on the ant hill, the ants stomp on you? I know that sounds ridiculous,
yeah,
but go ahead, Patty.
The oddest thing about what you just said is the opposite is actually happening today. We're seeing the other species reaching out to humans. We are seeing other species that are saying, I've had enough. It's time to change your tune. And we are reacting to them like humanity always reacts, like, oh, now we got to kill them. You know, they're standing up. They're saying they don't like what we're doing. Kill them, son of guns, you know. We have animals that are coming out of the wild that are giving us clear signals.
Yeah.
It couldn't be clearer. You don't have to speak their language to understand that they're saying, you're killing us. We have these mass die-offs. They're beaching themselves on the shore. And at the same time, we see in the animal kingdom, animals actually reaching out and helping humans, asking humans for help.
Yeah.
This speaks volumes.
My daughter took a video.
Our inability.
My daughter took a video just the other day that there was a raccoon that came up there and was not more than 2 feet away from her. And we feed some cats, and the raccoon came up there and would sit down, wasn't afraid of her, just sat down and, you know, had some food. And like you said, they're coming out of the woodwork. They're coming out of the woods. They need help. What they normally was used to having, they didn't have as much anymore because their land was so encroached on it. You know, man just bulldozed down the land and, you know, they got shuffled off into the direction. So it's getting harder and harder for them to find things to eat. And then they find some people that are actually not trying to hurt them, but are allowing them to sit there and eat, you know, join them at the table. You see what I'm saying? I was able to stand not more than 5 feet away from a deer, and that deer wasn't afraid of me. I've turned my little piece of this world into a sanctuary, and the animals, you wouldn't believe the birds that flock here to this property. You got to come out and see it sometime, Patty. It's beautiful. But my daughter was amazed by the fact that she could sit that close to what would classify, some people would be afraid of, and others would classify as just a, you know, a wild animal that was dangerous, you know. And they neither one of them was in fear of each other. They were working together, you know. She put the food in the bowl, and then the raccoon was could sit there and eat the food, you know. And it was a beautiful thing to watch.
You know, the most beautiful thing in the world to me, she says, is watching the human aspect reach out and help other species that they normally don't, they ignore. You know, I've seen so many times a bear who had gotten a bucket so fixed on its head that it couldn't get it off, and these people chased this bear down. The bear was fearing them. They chased this bear down, tackled it, held it down, and it took them about 35-40 minutes to dislodge this bucket off of this bear's head. Halfway through this, the bear figured out that it was being helped, and it laid there, and as soon as they got the bucket off his head, he ran, but he turned around and he looked. And you could see the recognition and the thankfulness. Another one, a woman, these people were on a boat, and it was a big hawk, and it had been trying to catch something, I guess, in the water, and it had gone into the water, and it was drowning. And they took this boat and a paddle, and the bird immediately knew when the woman outstretched this paddle that she was saving this bird, and the bird walked up the paddle and got on the paddle, stepped on her hands, and stayed there the whole time until they brought it to shore.
Wow.
And it would look at the woman, and it would talk. It talked to the woman the whole time. It was beautiful. These things that you see bring me back to a point to know that is where we truly need to be, and that the animals themselves know this too. It used to be a time when the animals did not fear us the way they do. We can get back there. The most beautiful thing in the world is seeing humanity act in this way to me. It is the most beautiful thing.
Well, I'm telling you, from my experience, you will never ever feel anything more wonderful than that feeling that you get when nature doesn't fear you.
Really,
it's amazing.
It's the mark of greatness to me, you know, to have an animal not fear you, because it's the easiest and most cowardly thing to do, to make an animal fear you.
Yeah.
You know, but to teach an animal that you mean them no harm and have that animal trust you, to me, that's one of the greatest gifts that humanity has. If we could only do that to each other.
Yep. So the question that I asked in the beginning of this show, what if we were gods and goddesses in training? Some of us are getting it. Some of us in this world are actually getting it. We're starting to understand, you know, we're not like the gods that you see in the superheroes where we can fly through the sky and rain down death and destruction, or, you know, save somebody from a supervillain. But we do have a lot of power, more power than we give ourselves credit for. We're little pieces of the puzzle. We're part of that part of that machine, that one gear that makes the entire thing work, that one piece of the puzzle that makes the entire picture, you know, and without any of us, that entire picture of all creation can't be completed. And just by the words coming out of our mouth, we've already explained it, how your words can literally affect so many people. Wars have started over words. And your actions. Animals aren't stupid. They know whenever they should be afraid of you. You put off a frequency or some sort of vibe anytime you're around just people alone. People know when you're negative. I mean, it's like you telegraph it. You got your radio signal. It's just going crazy. And when you're around animals, they know whether you're mean and do them harm or not. And after so many times of you being there and them being there, and they notice it, no matter how many times you've been there, you've never one time even moved towards them in any kind of threatening fashion whatsoever. They know that. They remember that. And they come back. I've got animals that come on my property that I'm just amazed by. I can walk from my house all the way back to the pond that we had built, and the birds, they don't fly away. They're not scared of me. And it's pretty cool. Does that make me any more special than you? No, because you've got the same power. You could do the same exact thing. The people that surround you on a daily basis, you teach them how to treat you. If you're mean to them, they're obviously going to be mean back to you. If you're, you know, threatening to them, they're obviously going to be threatening back to you. But if you're nothing but good to everybody that you come in contact with, it's that whole positive and negative thing all together.
There's a book that Barbara's been reading on TCT Radio. She's been doing a weekly read on it. She's a beautiful reader, by the way, just so you'll know.
Yeah, but, I listen in.
Yeah, it's Anastasia, The Ringing Cedars. And me and Barbara had a discussion. We're not sure if this is based on any facts that of the time that he's writing of. We know that the facts were well known that he was putting into the book, but we don't know if it was the actual story that is factual. But anyway, the story itself speaks exactly of what we are talking about, which is about the ability of humanity to live with nature and in harmony and peace and trust and love and the capacity that nature has to love us back, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's such a beautiful thing to envision this in my mind. To me, this is perfect. This is perfection. This is how life truly should be and can be. When I listen to this story, and anybody out there, if you can get this book, please read it. It's a series of books, by the way. Anastasia, The Ringing Cedars, or The Ringing Cedar. And you need to actually, invest yourself into this. Put yourself in this book. Understand your place is exactly where Anastasia's place is. At a moment's time, we can change this. This is the true harmony that brings us true love, health, benefit to all living things, abundance for every living thing, the ability to communicate in truth and in love. All of that is within you at every moment of your life. Yeah. Every moment of your life you have this capacity. You have this ability. It's never away from you. We don't get rid of it. We cover it up with all this egomania stuff that says that we are the do-all and be-all of life. And we're not. We are the part of life that either can create utopia or create destruction.
Yeah,
that is our part.
I, for one, I, for one, am so glad that I'm not God. I'm telling you, because
really?
I am not by any means perfect. You know, I don't expect to ever be perfect. But my little piece of the puzzle was made perfect, you know? And I know that sounds crazy, but I was meant to be what I am. And you were meant to be what you are. And together, the divine plan, or whatever you were, or the big magical mistake that happened that put us all here, without any of you, there's nothing that I can do to change this world that we live in. And I just flat out refuse to believe that it's not possible. Because in my book of faith, my God told me that it was possible. My God told me that if I had the faith of a mustard seed, I could move mountains. Well, I'm testing that theory. I got the faith of a mountain, and I'm moving mustard seeds, one positive pebble at a time. And if I can send those ripples out by myself and get this much stuff going on and people interacting with each other, imagine what you could do if you joined in on the process. And I'm not saying follow the leader. I'm saying join me as a partner. You know, be that next piece of the puzzle, that next gear in the machine that actually sends more ripples out. And it, you know, it's like that whole pay it forward thing. You don't really think about the complexity of what's actually occurring whenever you, like, you're standing in line at the store and you got some change coming to you and you put it down on the counter and you tell that lady, you know, these people behind me, this looks like this will cover their bill. Cover that bill for me. And they do that. And then those people, they're like amazed. Wow, somebody's, I don't even know this person. Didn't say hi or bye or anything like that. Just paid for my purchase and left. They're going to turn around and do that for somebody else. And maybe they won't turn around and do that for somebody else. They'll choose to do whatever they do, but nonetheless, if they did choose to do that for somebody else, and that kept on going and kept on going, and everybody just started doing this for each other. You drive past that homeless man, and instead of looking at him in disgrace, like, oh, you're disgusting and you smell bad, you probably ain't had a bath in years and you ain't got a job, why don't you get up and do something with your life? Instead of doing that, you show them some compassion and share some food or some money that they could go out and buy food. You know, instead of saying, well, if you just give that money to that man or woman, they're just going to go out and buy dope with it. So be it. That's their life. That's their choice. If that's the only thing that they find comfort in for that moment, but I was willing to sacrifice something that I had to give them that moment of comfort, so be it. It's not for me to decide or choose or judge what they're going to do. But the fact that I'm willing to take that chance on another human, that they're going to do something positive with the gift that I just give them from my resources. You see where I'm going with that? You see what I'm trying to say here?
Yes. I'd like to hear from Justin.
Me
and,
too.
Yeah.
Justin, are you ready with your microphone?
Well, I don't know, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Or am I lagging?
You're fine, go ahead.
Well, like you're saying, you know, everybody, there's a lot of people that see, you know, a lot of good in this world, and there's a lot of people that just don't care. Right? Some people, you know, they feed on other people's fear and, you know, stuff like that. And that's never gonna change. There's an animal side of the human species. That's all we are. And it's hard when there's a group of people that want to progress and do better for not only themselves, but for the planet and their children.
So
and that's how we get these rules and acts and bills and conducts and legislations and order, law and order. That's how we get these things. And then that hinders ourselves too, right?
So let's pose a hypothetical for you, Justin. let's say hypothetically that all the people of like minds that think the way that we do decide one day to start building this ship and decide to make a journey to some distant planet and create our own world out there. You think that that could be possible?
Well, growing up, right, it's all about our, people would say belief, but I'd say just narrative view, what we see going on around us. You know, I remember being a kid, rolling some snowballs, making a snow fort, and guess what? Group of other kids come along, what they do? They smashed it.
They tore it down, but we're not taking them with us to this new planet.
Right, but you see, you're building a spaceship. You now have to make an army to defend that spaceship because there's another group of kids around the block that want to be bullies. And that's real. From the moment in time that you go to kindergarten to the day that you retire, it's all schoolyard games. Tit-tat, tit-for-tat, and reindeer games, right? We see the drama everywhere. How do we change our social behaviors? Look at what we're doing. Where does
that behavior come from, Justin? Is it learned behavior, or are we born with that behavior?
Well, we thrive on empathy, a different sorts or arrangements of empathy, right? From sex, drugs, rock and roll to the word felicity, which means intense happiness. It is no different than vanity, which is selfishness.
But once again,
right? Our own selfishness. What makes me feel good?
The question.
Does it make me feel good to put somebody down?
The question she posed. Do you think they were actually born that way? I mean, like the example we laid out there earlier, you could take a baby from every single race out there and you could put them all in the same playpen. They know no differences. They don't hate each other. They don't want to fight with each other. They're not trying to attack each other.
That's right. See, in children, I'm going to take a minute here. In children, they say that children's brains, animals, learn 2.5 times faster than in adults. That's because the child has no identity yet. See, the child, the baby, is learning from mom, dad, society, right? The different genres, human versus society, human versus everything, right? When they learn that identity, now they have an ego, which at the center of all, every individual is stubbornness, right? If I believe this way, I will not believe in what you're telling me. That's self-stubbornness, right? A lot of people don't want to have an open-minded or be awe-inspirational or visceral, deep-seated. The child's learning because the child's trying to find out who the child is. Once the child growing up, it has, I know more than you, I don't need your opinion, this and that, and that's the way it is. And then they put down others because then it boosts them up. Right? If you've got a brand new car and I'm your neighbor and I don't really like you, but, oh yeah, nice car, but it's got scratch. Sorry, pardon my language.
But
that's the way it is. And how do... Go ahead.
If you have a child, and if this child is brought up not to look at another as having more or being more or being less. If you have a child that is brought up in an environment where they are free to envision, to create, to make personal judgments, while at the same time brought up in a place of respect and tolerance for other people with their own judgments, to respect their judgments, their points of view and everything, do you still believe that there is no way that we can come to a consensus within the environment that these children are being taught? See, today children are brought up in a constant confusion of dialectic, of it's this way and it's that way, it's black and it's white, and it's this way and this is the way. And if that is removed from that child, where they're not learning what is right and what is wrong, but they are experiencing what is right and what is wrong. Do you think that would have an impact in changing?
There's a lot of things that can impact many lives, right? But it comes down to the individual. I'm going to use this as an example. I got, you know, my aunt and my uncle, right? They got three children. And this is real life. This is what happened. I'm not going to mention any names or nothing, but three children, one girl, two boys, right? Throughout life, normal kids, raised good, they got horses, they got snowmobiles, they got life, they go to private schools, right? They're allowed to make their own decisions, right? My cousins, they're great people, raised with the most caregiving family settings and everything. But, you know, my little cousin, she's a girl. She's now on the streets doing crystal meth. The oldest child, he doesn't know what he's doing. He's still a 5-year-old child, right? Great guy, loving, has his own kids, but he can't hold a job or do anything. He's not focused, right? And the middle child, he's an architect. So what went wrong with the daughter? As one would say, the daughter's just on the street doing nothing with her life, and the oldest, he's just the klutz and this and that, and he doesn't know. He just makes ends meet. The great father, though, right? And then the middle child, where did he get his attributes, characteristics, personality from, right? When they were all raised under the same house.
Well, I understand.
Every individual is going to be different. I
understand that perspective of individualization. Yet, are those three children, do any of those children hate? Do any of those children war? Do any of those children do things that harm other people? Or do they live within their own environment, you know, without encroaching on others and others' beliefs and others' ways of doing things? Mm-hmm. See, this is what we're talking about, is a mindset that says that you can be an architect, you can be a person who doesn't like to work, and you can be a person who wants to do drugs. That's fine. You have that ability to do that. We don't have the wherewithal to decide everybody is uniform and must conform to a certain system of being. What we're trying to talk about is that people can come together without seeing the differences as being the reason why we can't come together.
Yeah, and then,
you know, and does that make sense?
And the question that was asked at the beginning of the show is, what if we were gods and goddesses in training? And so the example that you gave, Justin, about the kids that were grown up in the family that was a wonderful type of family, a good, caring, loving family, those folks, those kids didn't just interact with their family. They were out there in the world as well, interacting with all these other gods and goddesses in training. And so, obviously, they had their own choice of free will to choose whether to do what their family raised them to be like, or to go out there and experience the world and do what the world is doing. And obviously, in some cases, they made the wrong choice, and they're doing something that their family wouldn't approve of. But the question still remains: if we were gods and goddesses in training, and we had all these capabilities of everything, we knew what our family would approve and disapprove of, and we knew what the world's needs were, and we decided to choose a path together. We couldn't do it by ourselves, you know, unless I suddenly become God and I could flip my finger and bam, the whole world's perfect. Nobody's fighting, nobody's arguing, everybody's got what they need and everything is just fine. And we missed out on the whole entire lesson. It's the same equivalence of giving that rich person, giving their child a fast Ferrari, expensive car, and not having them learn anything before getting it. Just, you know, I love you so much, here's a Ferrari. You know, and they go out and they crash it and kill somebody. You see what I'm saying here? The lessons that we're trying to learn here in life, as we're trying to figure out where we're going in life, we know where we've been, we're trying to figure out what our purpose is here. All of us, every single one of us, are on that spiritual journey or personal journey of our own, and we're going to make choices in life that's going to determine where we end up in life. It may be even determine how other people perceive us when they look at us. This guy's a bum. He ain't even got a job. You know? This one here is stuck on drugs. Why are they stuck on drugs? What was it in their life that gave them the option to make the choice to do what it is that they did? Everyone is responsible for their own actions, ultimately. No matter what family you came from, whether it be a poor family that was violent to you or a loving family that was nothing but good to you, when it all comes down to it, the choices that you make in life and the lessons that you learn are on your own back, on your own shoulders. You see what I'm saying here? Did we lose Justin?
Right. No. It's like you're saying, all these things are a reaction, a potential difference in the person, right? That our ears are diaphragms, our eyes are, and we feel and everything. What empathy makes that person's mind thrive? Who knows, right? We're only five definitions or characteristics away from the whole world being on medication, right? They got a definition for every single kind of behavior out there. They call them cognitive illnesses and, you know, behavior disabilities.
But what's the resolution?
Man is not allowed to do what they want.
What's the resolution then? We have to have some sort of remedy. What is the resolution? How do we fix society to the extent that everybody can now have the option to make the right choice and not be on drugs or kill each other or the craziness? We already proven that you can put all these babies in the same playpen together and they're not going to go to war with each other. They're gonna look at each other just like, you know, in amazement. You know, you're pretty interesting, you know. Until they learn the act of hate or violence or difference, they're not going to harm one another. Different animals.
Or
Patty and I.
No different than a crow.
Yeah.
Right. Well, like a crow or a raven. Why do they want shiny? Why do they want shiny objects? When you got all those babies in the crib, a couple months go by. And one wants the other one's toy. You see why? Because it's shiny. Who knows? Why does the crow want it? Why is the crow going to take that from you? Why is the monkey going to come up and go to a woman first?
But that's where...
That's the animal side of man. You'll never get that. We are primitive and we have to acknowledge and accept that. And that, I believe, is the first step. Is knowing that we are no different than a monkey. I can teach a monkey to brush its teeth. I can teach a monkey to drive a car. I could teach a monkey to sing its ABCs.
But if that were true,
I mean? Like,
Justin...
We're primitive.
If that were true, if we cannot rise above the primitive nature of ourselves, then we wouldn't even be having this conversation today.
It'd all be pointless.
Right. And so... Yeah, we have these aspects within ourselves. To say we don't have control over them is, to me, not accurate, because we always have control. We have been taught that we don't need to control these things. In fact, we have been taught that we need to express these things. Everything that we're taught today in school, everything that we're taught today in society and through the media and everything else, teaches us that we must bring these things to the forefront of our lives, that we must culture these things and grow these things. But it's not necessarily true that we have to and we will. We can always, and it's been proven throughout history, if you look back, there are people who are born to war. and they will acquiesce to that part of themselves. But there are people who are born to peace, who will not war, and who will teach empathy, and who will teach tolerance, and who will teach love, even in the face of this destruction. You know, so we can't say, at least I can't buy into that because we have a primitive nature, we must be primitive. And I understand what you're saying is that a child will, at some point in their lives, in the playpen, will say, hey, I like that toy you got, and I'm going to try and play with that toy. And the other child says, no, this is my toy, I've been playing with it, I'm going to keep this toy. And something will evolve out of that. Two things can evolve. Either the child will realize that fighting over this toy is not going to get me anywhere, I'm just going to pick up this other toy. Or he will take the toy and the other kid will say, well, you can have the dang toy, I'm going after this other one. Those are the two things that happen if you let this play out. So in either aspect, we don't have to give in to a primitive nature. And just like nature doesn't have to give in to its own primitive nature, and we've seen this played out also, cross species rescuing each other, cross species nursing and nurturing each other, you know, beneficial species working together.
Yeah, cooperating.
All of these things, yeah. So it's not
definitely
black and white.
We can't say that there's only two scenarios in there, right? Because anger is an empathy too.
Well, sure. Look, for every possible outcome, there's so many different possible. Those two that she just pointed out are enough to say that you have an option in life. You don't have to be that animal that you believe is inside you. You know, the whole good and evil scenario. When you wake up every morning, the sun comes up, you got a whole fresh, clean slate. You can either repeat what you did yesterday, or you can go out and try to do something positive for this world. So the potential of us literally bringing about a heaven on earth, whether you want to agree to it or disagree, it's still there. All potentials are still there. Every single possibility, every single outcome is still on the table, and it's our free will that gives us the choice to decide which of those paths that we're going to choose to go to. And until we finally reach this stage of enlightenment that where we understand how to control the beast that's within, we'll continue to war. We'll continue to do destructive things to this earth, and we will never be able to reach that ultimate potential, that big picture that I was talking about. Each one of the pieces of the puzzle, if you take your piece of the puzzle and you pull it away from humanity and you say, I'm not going to deal with humanity ever again. I'm just going to be by myself and that's it. The whole entire grand scheme of things, that picture will never ever be complete because you refuse to use what you can use in order to make that vision come to pass. You see what I'm saying here? If we're literally gods and goddesses in training, we're not ready to have the power that we could actually create that. But we're making steps. Every good choice we make a step closer. Every time somebody does something decent for somebody, we take a step closer to that perfect world that we all wish we could live in.
And we may not ever be able to get rid of that primal instinct in everyone. I understand what you're saying, Justin, and I know that it exists within us, that primal instinct. But I do believe that if we revamped the way we view society, the way we view worth, the way we view the systems that have been set up of control, if we ever were able to do away with this system where every individual on this earth had the opportunity to learn, be, grow, do however, with abundance of life and nourishment and all of these things, I think that we would be in a place to where peace could be accessible to all people. Not to say that people aren't going to have tempers and people aren't going to get angry at each other, but if we don't have the readily available means to destroy each other and instead have the means to promote life and to promote peace instead, I think that we would get a lot further in the game. I think this system breeds the discontent that causes us to rise up against each other, to have intolerance toward each other, to want to fight because the neighbor has a new car and I don't. If everybody had the ability to be who and what they wanted outside of a system of rules and regulations and status and all of these things, I think then if education was open to every living thing, every human being to be able to learn and grow at their own pace, in their own way, in their own dreams, in their own visions, I think then that we would see that we can rise above this nature of aggressiveness, this nature of greed, well, this nature of having to be the one, you know?
Most definitely. Like, when we talk about education, these universities and these colleges, and specifically universities, you know, were founded back in the 1600s by, you know, men that came together and shared their notes and had coffees and tea together. That's the original schooling systems. The school systems that our children in law means infant, somebody that can't defend themselves, they go to these safe havens, these schools, and the schools don't do nothing for the children. A child should be focusing on what their mind thrives on. If a child gets mechanics, if it gets mathematics, if it enjoys just cutting hair, right? They should be focused on what they can achieve.
So what I'm
hearing
you say,
because it would help them out later on in their life.
What I'm hearing you say in your words is that there are possibilities that if allowed to do so, these children could do exactly what we've been talking about.
Back 200 years ago, an apprentice, a 14-year-old kid that got sent off to some guy, right? I'm a father, I have my wife, we're married, I got some money, it's my child, I want the best for him, right? So I go and I say hey to that rock carver over there, I say, hey, here's $50 a month or whatever, 50 pence, whatever it is, and I say, will you teach my child? Take him on as an apprentice. And that's how we thrive. America right now is 44th in linear literacy, 29th in mathematics. What's so great about America? What's so great about Canada? I look at all these quote-unquote immigrants coming over from these other countries that have amazing eating habits, that have great beliefs, right? And it doesn't have to be anything about God. Belief is all about coming together. That's what a religion is. Two people that share those common goals, right? And they come to that common place, that temple, that church, wherever, and they achieve something great. That's what religion really means.
Well,
the white people are living, I'm gonna say it like that. The way that the white people have grown up in the North Americas is sickening. They're all on drugs. And they're all on pharmaceuticals. All of them.
Not all of them.
My age. They're doing nothing.
Not all of them.
You got some that, right, because welfare breeds welfare, and the rich breed the rich, and how many people are living on the system because there is no jobs, but there is jobs, but they're bringing in how many thousands of people from the other side of the world that had it so rough, and now they got a taste of these great countries. They're doing everything they can do, and they're getting all the jobs. There's not one corner store that I know of in this city that is owned by a white person.
It doesn't matter. See, the whole key is...
Because they come over here and they...
It doesn't, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter what color somebody is or what their background is. It's about the choices that everybody makes from the time that they get up in the morning till the time right. they go to bed at night, from here to infinity and beyond. We actually
and the
have...
The issues that we're facing aren't caused by the people, they're caused by the system.
Yeah. And so if the system is flawed...
Well, the system, who
if the system
okay, hold on though. The system. I'm raised with good parents, and my father he works for the chemical agents, whatever it is there that they produce Prozac with, or lithium, or Valium, or these children are making these things and the doctors are giving them to us.
Sure.
This is human versus society.
If the system is flawed,
right?
Justin.
So the doctors that are supposed to be doing good for the people are just drugging everybody up because they're reading the piece of paper that's in front of them. You know, back in the day, 200 years ago, that doctor went out in the bush and he went and ground up his medicines to help save somebody, just like the old.
But the corporations are creating. Right. The corporations are creating the toxins. The doctors are prescribing the toxins. The health industry is run by the system. Exactly. The system is what is creating what we are dealing with today. They create our education. They create our infrastructures. They create our media. They create our government. They create everything that is a part of our lives today. This system that we
right.
are under right now is causing so much havoc in the world. There are better systems.
And if that
there
system
are better
is,
ways.
If that system is flawed.
We tell our
if that system is flawed, who ultimately can change that system but us? You said it doesn't matter about God. I mean, there ain't no, let's just take God completely out of the picture. And let's take all the golden rules and all the rights and wrongs out, just completely out of the picture. Ultimately, we are responsible for our own destinies as a species or a being, whatever you want to choose to call us. You know, whether we're half man, half beast, whatever, we are ultimately responsible for everything that happens out there in this world. We decide to go to war. We decide to allow other people to starve. We decide to raise our children either properly or improperly. We decide to either be great parents or terrible parents. We decide that. It's not, you can't put it off on anything else but the people. Now, ultimately, if the system is flawed and the people are the only solution to fixing this thing, then you have to begin somewhere. And the somewhere that we, the first step that we have taken here is to join each other because of the things that we've researched and studied throughout our lives and to try to put a alternative on the table for everyone out there to understand that you have the power to change things. You change things in your own home. You've told me many times, Justin, that you change things, that you do things differently in your home because you see that you want to take your children down a different path and have them have a better life and a better chance. Well, if everyone seen the world through your eyes and could do the exact same thing, eventually, at some point in time, all of humanity could finally reach that ultimate stage of enlightenment and put those pieces of the puzzle in the right place and get the big picture. You see what I'm saying? It's not impossible.
The only way to have it happen in an instant thing would be for everybody to leave the government buildings and take down that gold flag that's inside of them and perhaps everybody repent. You see, because we're raising our children, our little boys, to be the fireman, the doctor, the dentist, and we're raising our little girls to be skinny and pretty so they can get the lawyer, the doctor, the fireman. And that is the inscribing, the embedding, the instilling, ingraining into
yes.
our children. right? Get the high heels and the golf clubs and the boats and the Ferraris, going to the exotic clubs, doing the drugs. The music says those blue and yellow, purple pills, right? Like, you see the psychosis, it becomes a cognitive disorder in the entire social country. The whole country is like that. It's no different
the whole world.
From Canada to the United States.
So
I wouldn't say the whole world, because we go to the mountains and we see how the monks live, right?
Sure.
They live in the most beautiful valleys ever, and they walk how high to get to their common goal, their common achievement, and they walk back down and they drink from the natural springs.
So
they don't smoke and not putting who knows what kind of pills in their body, right?
So those
they're living in natural ways.
Those are the examples that we can look
that's
out
how you progress.
And we could actually learn from one another. And that's the whole point of this conversation. I started this show off today by asking the question, what if we were gods and goddesses in training? All right? And so I knew right out of the gate, as soon as you say the word god or goddesses, immediately the first thing that goes through somebody's head is now religion. Okay, wait, he's getting ready to talk about religion. I don't want to hear this, and people want to bail out. But if you stuck with me to this point and you've actually asked yourself that question, and you've asked yourself who it is that is around you, who is wise enough that you would give them that kind of power, that you would give them the knowledge of the universe, the knowledge of all creation, and the power to literally give life and take life at the whim. If we're sitting here today and we're having this conversation about how life actually came about, where we're going as humanity, what the potentials. You know, Henry Ford said that if you believe it, it's possible, or you believe it's not possible, then you're right. On both sides of the spectrum, and that goes straight across to the whole entire grand scheme of things, no matter which direction you turn. Is that if you believe that it is possible for humanity to literally bring about heaven on earth, a utopia, so to speak, it is possible. We have everything we need to do so. There are tons and tons of reasons why not to do something. There's one really good reason why we should at least strive to do what it is that we're talking about. We know the system's flawed because we've seen the system. We've watched how the system does things. So if it's flawed and we know all this, instead of feeding that same beast that's eating us alive and that has been tormenting mankind since the dawn of time, then maybe we should use all those powers and all the gifts that have been given to us and the wisdom that we've acquired throughout the small fractions of our lifetimes in the grand scheme of things and all of history. Maybe we should use those powers to start guiding our children and our families and our friends and our communities and our states and our countries and our continents and our world in the right direction by showing them what that power has done for you personally and how that has affected those around you. When people see a community that works, they follow the community. You saw a community that lived up in a beautiful country and they respected each other, they respected things, so you know that it is possible for that kind of community to work. I understand that we have good and evil in us. I understand that we make bad choices that destroy our environment. And I'm sitting here because I do understand this. I'm telling everybody, looking at the big picture, that we have everything we need to fix this world if we so choose to do so. We're standing here in front of a keyboard. We got access to information that we never had in history. And if we did have it in history, if there were past civilizations that finally made it this far and they finally reached a singularity where they destroyed themselves, we don't need to repeat that. I'm saying we got what we need to literally feed the homeless, shelter the homeless, feed the hungry, heal the sick, And people from all different faiths, all different backgrounds, it doesn't, you don't have to just pick out one, have said this forever and a day, that you can heal people with what nature has provided. You can take care of each other with what nature has provided. If you respect nature and you pay attention and you learn from nature and you do these things and you work in perfect harmony with nature, that big picture that we talked about, all the pieces of the puzzle fall into place and you got this beautiful picture, the whole grand scheme of things. You understand what I'm saying? Silence. Radio silence. Justin, you said you had my answer.
Our children, our children should be the ones in charge because truly they are unimpeachable.
Well, I'm not so sure we want to put the power of gods in our children's hands just yet. I wouldn't even put it in our hands.
What good has any adult done?
That's my point.
Not just the country.
That's my point.
The world.
Why would we want? Why would?
Well, there,
right,
there.
If you look at
there are communities like Ubuntu. There is a very, very large community of several thousand people in Africa who have created a society based not. There's no monetary value to this society. There's no class structure to this society. Education is free. Development for renewable resources, all of these things are free. Food is free. The children are able to learn on whatever scale they choose to learn on. The people live together, all races, all denominations. There's no set religious aspect. There's nothing. It is all done for the good of the whole. And you have the Amish who also live in these systems. People have done good and are able to do good, and people are willing to come together to do good. The issue that we face is that society makes it so very, very, very hard to be able to step out and do these things. You have to go to countries where there's no oversight, where people are allowed to be as they choose to be. These are usually third world countries where they've been ravaged by war so long and their resources stolen that there's nothing there nobody wants anymore in the area that they are, and then they're free to go in and build these systems outside of this system that we are in today. So there are people, adults, who have this vision and who are willing to do this. And we lost Justin.
Yeah.
But I think it's highly possible, Shaziz. I truly do. I see the only impediment we have is our mindset and our inability to move beyond that it can't be done thing that we've set up in our minds.
Yep, and that's the key.
It can be done, and it is being done.
That's the key right there. You know, like I said, Henry Ford said, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right, because that's what the world is. If you think you can't do it, you're not even going to try. But if you got hope or faith or whatever you want to call it, if you got a vision that you want to try to create something in this world, there are literally people who say that we literally create our reality that we live in, that we choose to experience all that we experience. And so by their mindset, they're literally telling you that you are a god. You can create the world around you. All you have to do is use the power of positive thinking and think, I want to be rich, and suddenly you're rich or whatever. All I'm asking for the world is to step back, look at the big picture, recognize that each and every one of us by ourselves are a piece of a massive puzzle, a little cog in a machine that if ever was to be utilized the way that it could be utilized, we could solve all the problems that break our hearts on a daily basis. There's no reason for anybody to starve to death. We're here in the year 2017. We have access to technology that can keep people's food cold and keep everything fresh and be able to give them fresh drinking water and a comfortable home to live in, a warm bed with blankets, just like so many of us have the luxury to enjoy. There's no reason for anybody on this world to do without. There's only greed. There's only selfishness that causes suffering and wars. The words that people use to propagandize each other and tell each other that our differences make one or the other better than the other, that my God is better than your God, and so on and so forth. What if we really were gods and goddesses in training? If you were the teacher, the instructor, the creator of all this, of all these gods and goddesses in school, would you right now hand us, would you hand me personally the power of a god and rest assured that I was going to be a servant to you and a representation for you and your wants and things, and I'm going to do things your way? If I had that much power, could I not be corrupted? Even if I'm the most loving soul on the planet, and I say to you, I say that I'm going to make sure that everyone on this planet loves each other whether they like it or not. I just took away your free will. And the divine exactly. plan is gone. Now you don't have a choice. You might as well just be a slave. But since our Creator decided to give us all this beauty down here, and He gave us the free will, he or she or whatever the case may be, I'm not going to try to step on, I didn't want to turn this into a religious thing, I'm not going to try to step on your personal spiritual beliefs or journey, I'm just saying, he or she or whatever the case may be, had the wisdom to give us free will and give us the opportunity and all this beauty down here, knowing that we could go in either direction. We could either destroy it all and kill ourselves off, or we could utilize this and bring about literally a heaven on earth ourselves. We can't destroy this planet because the wisdom that created this planet literally made it a self-contained biosphere that recycles everything. Everything that you waste, everything that you drop on the ground, nature will absorb. Maybe it might take a little bit of time for some things that we put together, but nonetheless, 500 years after man, there is no signs of man. And it's that brilliance that literally knew ahead of time that we were going to fight with each other. We were going to kill and lie and steal from each other. We were going to do each other wrong. We were going to try to gain power. We were going to try to do whatever it is. It's all about me, me, me. And until we figure out it's all about us and become the big picture, then we can never, ever possibly be handed the power of the gods. Somebody tell me where I'm wrong. Please.
You're definitely not wrong. And the first person who ever stood up and said, yes, I want to be God, that's the person you run from. Just saying.
Yeah.
Because no one here on this earth has the capacity to play God. We've already seen the repercussions of those who think they can.
Yeah. They war with one another. They try to get power over one another. They think themselves better. They think that their race is the one. They think that their ends justify the means. If we can kill off all the stupid people on the planet, suddenly everyone will be smart. You see the hypocrisy in that? You kill off all the stupid people, then you've got a lot of pieces of the puzzle that no longer exist. So where is your level of measurement now? How can you even say you're smart when there ain't no stupid people?
And what is your definition of stupid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And who gets to decide who's stupid and who's not? Folks, we have a potential of unlimited possibilities. And for every negative, there's a positive out there. You can think of a billion and one reasons why we'll never be able to succeed the ultimate dream of literally bringing about a heaven on earth. You can think of a billion and one more reasons after that, and I will come up with a billion and more to counteract your billion and more. Because I stopped sometime in life, I stopped thinking about myself as, you know, the center of the universe. That the world didn't revolve around me. I wasn't no better than anybody else out there. I realized, I stepped back and I looked at what was going on. The wars, the rumors of wars, the plagues, the famine, the pestilence. And I listened to all the words said by prophets and people and just the average Joe and the scientist and the representation of the world. And I seen the hypocrisy of 40, 50 years of my life. I'm seeing a commercial on TV. There's a starving baby in the world, and I'm asking why? Why? Why is there a starving baby in the world? We got planes that can fly through skies and go into space and submarines that can go to depths under the water that would kill you trying to do it by yourself. We've got technology so advanced that it's just amazing. And cell phones, computers that we carry around in our hands. We've got things that would resolve every single problem ever even thought of in this world. We're standing at a crossroads right now with a choice to either repeat the past over and over again, if there were societies before us and they reached a singularity and technology, their own technology destroyed them. Why do we have to repeat those steps? At this point in the game, and we look out and see what we have to offer each other and what the world has to offer us and how, when working in harmony with nature, that we thrive. You see what I mean? The possibilities are endless. I do believe in the dream. And as long as I can believe in that dream, as long as I don't fall to the negativity and all the people telling me why it is that we can't do this, I'm going to keep saying what I say. That's why the Knights of the Round Table exists. I want you to believe in yourself. I'm not looking to be the king or the leader or the god or anything like that. I'm working to be the piece of the puzzle that I was meant to be. Just like all the other brilliant people in this world. They have talents. They have skills. Many people come together and they make things happen. They build houses and they do things that are wonderful. And then on the opposite side of the spectrum, many people come together and they do terrible things. We got to choose what kind of world we want to live in. We got to choose what kind of world we want to leave behind for our children and their children. And if humanity's ever to reach that ultimate stage of enlightenment that everybody keeps talking about, then they're going to have to figure that out. They're going to have to figure out, well, one thing. I can't do it by myself. You can't do it by yourself. But together, the more people we gather doing the right thing at the right times in the right places, the closer we get to that ultimate dream that I believe is a reality. I guarantee you, there are more than some people that believe I'm crazy. History will repeat itself if we ignore it. But every day that the sun comes up, you got a whole clean slate. You can either be the jerk you was yesterday, or you can be the good guy or gal that makes something better for somebody beside yourself. Unfortunately, as much as we like to think that we're gods, if we're in school, I submit we're still in preschool. What do you think, Patty? Did I lose you?
I agree. No, you didn't lose me. I was dealing with some other issues at the moment, little kitties. But, yeah, I agree 100%. Shaziz, there is no room on this for 8 billion gods and goddesses.
Nope.
It's not going to happen. We already have one creator, and he did, she did, whoever you want to believe, did a miraculous, wondrous, magical, extraordinary thing when they created this earth for us and put us here.
Yep.
We should be grateful beyond beyond anything that we could ever be grateful for. This is the one we should be consider our sacredness.
Yep.
To be sacred, this system that was given to us so that we could thrive. And instead, what we've done is we've created detriment. We have created suffering. We have created all the issues that cause us to be less than we truly are. We have disgraced the gift that was given to us by destroying our lives, our children's lives, the earth, and all the living things on it.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Me personally, I've been through enough in my life that I am humbled, I'm honored, and I am proud to be a servant to my fellow brothers and sisters, because I know that the ultimate outcome of what we could literally accomplish is so much greater than the imagination will allow you to even dream about under the current circumstances of the world that we find ourselves in today. We have an opportunity right now to literally move towards that dream. And I'm not willing to give that up, because I believe that I love my grandchildren so much, and I love everybody else's children so much, that I want to leave behind a world that they don't have to fear the boogeyman behind the door. And they can go out there and they can experience all the beauty of nature and the world like I finally got the chance to see with my own two eyes. I believe in the dream, Patty. And that's why I do. That's why we do what we do.
Yes. And, you know, unlike you, Shaziz, there are times when I get so frustrated and I think, oh my gosh, it's, you know, there's no use. But then I have people like you and Barbara and the people that surround me in my life, my grandchildren, that teach me that that's not an option. That the only way that we can affect change is to not give up. The only way that we can make a future for our children is to be aware, to be conscious of what our children are learning from us. And if we give up in frustration, then our children learn that it's okay to give up and be frustrated.
That's right.
But if we persevere and we say, make one step toward the positive, and then take another step toward the positive, and forget about the encroachment of all this other, because that one step of positiveness that you have just put forward has changed the world. This is what we need to teach our children. We need to teach them that there is a difference between living a life full of beauty and living a life full of frustration and defeatism.
Yep.
Our children need to know that anything they can envision is a possibility. Yet we live in a society now that teaches them nothing you envision is worthy. This is horrible. The only thing that you can be is what the TV says you can be. The only thing that you can have is what the TV says you can have. We need to scrap that. We need to counteract that by allowing our children to know how beautiful and brilliant and creative they truly are, and promoting that in them. Think out of the box. Don't ever think in the box. Think out of the box. Open your mind and never shut it down.
Yep, that's the point.
What we need to teach our children.
That's the point of this whole thing. If you believe it's possible, we can make it come to pass. It's as simple as that, you know. And like I said a million times before, you can find all the negatives that you can possibly muster up and continue to keep pouring them out and say that it's not possible, that we ever could reach that potential. But nonetheless, even using science, you cannot deny that if we did decide, if we chose to come together, we could make that picture complete. It's as simple as that. Folks, I started...
And as adults, we need to be willing to make those sacrifices that it will take
yep.
to ensure our children have the right aspect about themselves, the right abilities within themselves as they're growing up. There are sacrifices that need to be made, and we as adults have to be willing to make
yep.
those.
And we as adults may never, ever get the chance to enjoy the fruits of our labor. But the stones that we set down before our children will be our legacy, that we left behind something so much better than what we had to contend with. We broke the chains of war, we broke the chains of violence and hate and discontent, and we moved humanity in the direction that would allow us to literally become the best that we could possibly be. That's what it's all
Indeed.
About. Folks, we're way over time. You've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. And like I said before, if you believe in what you hear here, if you like any parts of these podcasts, chop them up, share them out there, you know, debate them, talk with people, share this information on your social media networks. Come up here and join us. Become one of the Knights. Sit down at the table with us and help us see your perspective of the world and the ideas that you've got to making this thing work for the world, for all of us. Understand that we can't do this by ourselves. We're not asking you for anything donation-wise or anything. We're not asking for nothing but for you to bring your piece of the puzzle to the table. And for if you want to help us build this picture, to put the whole picture where it should have been to begin with, then share that so that the other pieces of the puzzle will know that it's in play. We're all starting to bring this thing together. We're all coming together to actually make the picture a reality. It is possible for us to fix all these things that we got going on in our world. We have to choose to want it so badly that we're willing to sacrifice us as adults do the hard work that would make it easier for the next one to complete the job, if you understand what I'm trying to say. So with that said, before we head up out of here, Patty, you got any last words of wisdom?
Love, you know, love life. Love the vision of a life where your children are free to be, where there is no war, where there is no famine, where there is no control upon their lives. Love that in yourself, in your mind, in your heart, and keep it there in the forefront. Don't forget it. Don't let it get covered up by the news. Don't let it get covered up by the job. Don't let it get covered up by anything. Promote love in your child, in your life. That's the best thing we can do right now until we can come together and really change the world. But let's do it for our children in our own lives, in our own homes. Let's make that the priority.
I couldn't have said it any better. Live life in love and make it so, people. If you want the dream, then we got to go for it. Because the alternative is the other direction. I don't like the other direction. I don't like the pain and the suffering that comes about by people running amok in this world and just selfishly, you know, harming one another. I don't like the idea of somebody in this world not having food while I have food. I wish there was a way that I could take my resources and stretch them out. You know, there's a story in a book that a lot of people despise. It talks about a man that took a basket with fish and bread in there and spread it around to the masses, and the basket just never went empty. And I wish that I had that capability, but I don't. All I got is these words. And a whole lot of love in my heart and the belief that it is possible to literally make the dream come true. Help me do it by sharing these podcasts.
What is the dream? The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us, from every nation, come together and make that future a great one.
Old woman! What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how do you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I am Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed,
bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot!
We're knights of the round table, we dance when we're able. We do routines, we call the scenes, we put work in back cable. We dine go here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and scramelot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are for the table. So many times we give and rise to our quite unseen able. We'll rock our flag in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram along.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Hey, hey, hey. King Shaziz the Terrible. King Shaziz the Terrible and the Knights of the Round Table.